Step inside. Walk this way. You and me, nerds. Hey, hey. This is Inside the Locker! Welcome to Inside the Locker, the only weekly sportscast that only commits double dribbling when watching the Godzilla trailer, because goddamn, that thing is awesome. Oh my god, my mouth just filled up with saliva waiting for that release date. I'm your host, Brian Salisbury, starting odd job for the N64 Golden Eyes, and I am joined by Mr. JC Lionheart DeLeon.
What up, what up?
Elliot, don't you dare mention ETE to me, Fontanette.
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra. And filling in for our neighbor Adam is Tyler Neverminer Major.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Tyler is a filmmaker, fellow Indiana boy, as well as a frequent guest on the newly resurgent Diecast podcast. You can hear Tyler playing those tabletop games with our chairman, Mr. Jacob Hall.
And getting very mad at those tabletop games. I've been trying this Zen thing lately. I've been trying to, like, calm down a little bit. Yeah.
We'll see how that Zen is tested in our second segment, which is, of course, in the second segment, we have yet again a totally accurate, desperately necessary movie elimination tournament! Wow, I think that's the only time I've ever gotten it all the way through without stumbling.
Yeah.
Right on. It's going to be our last one for a while, and it is a biggie. We have a very special guest referee there, but I do want to remind you before we get into that, Inside the Locker, just like all of our content on oneofus.net, is available on iTunes. Just search for One of Us in the podcast section. You can also find us on Stitcher now, which is a thing that totally exists. I don't know what Stitcher is, I'll be completely honest with you, but you guys were asking for it, and I was like, you know what? Sure, we'll do that. So if you're averse to using iTunes, yeah, I was like, oh, well, that's a thing the kids are into. So I feel like I'm 57 years old right now.
So
like,
old and uncool.
The kids are into it, so, you know, I thought I would.
I found new gray patches in my hair this morning. All right, so I literally am getting older.
You're still in your 20s, right?
I'm not old enough to be getting gray hair. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. But you know what? You might have that Jason Murphy silver fox thing going on, which I think...
Oh, I'm going to look good. I know I'm going to look good. I'm just saying I'm going to look older.
Well, good for you, Tyler. You can also find the show on Twitter at ITLcast. You can also become a subscriber to the website, giving $25 every month, or just make a one-time donation. We'd really appreciate that. And we have some great incentives coming up down the pipe for you on that. You can also follow the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. But before we stand on any more ceremony, hold the goddamn phone. It's sports news.
Flash, the captain and Mrs. America and all the ships at SeaQuest. These are the scores and stories.
Stop the press.
All right, JC, take us through the labyrinth of sports headlines that we are going to discuss this week.
Yeah, so the first thing we're going to talk about, a lot of people may not be aware, but the NFL draft being in May is actually kind of new. The NFL draft used to be held around mid-April. The NFL decided to take ownership of the month of May and move the draft back there. Well, the end result is this time of year when coaches are used to having all their scouting done and they have who they're going to pick. Now they're just really bored and they're just kind of doing whatever they can think of. At NFL Draft Scout, he's an NFL Draft Scout. He tweeted the other day that he was given the greatest, maybe laziest quarterback comparison ever. A coach in the AFC North, he didn't mention which one, went to the trouble of comparing Teddy Bridgewater to Willie Beeman.
Now, wait a minute. Willie Beeman's a movie character.
Willie Beeman is the fictional quarterback from Any Given Sunday, played by Jamie Foxx. Said the coach regarding Bridgewater, quote, "He's a dynamic playmaker, but is he the guy you want running your offense? They're very similar."
Man, I mean, part of me loves the idea of the NFL going a little bit meta because it means they aren't taking themselves too seriously. But there has to be a cap on this. This is a dangerous precedent.
They must be bored.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this coach thinks that Any Given Sunday is actually a documentary. He doesn't know the difference between the two.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like, I think people are wondering why, like, the Patriots a few weeks ago brought in Johnny Manziel for a workout, and people are wondering why. And I'm like, I think teams are just bored. They don't have anything else to do.
Well, it'll get them some news for a little bit, too, if they bring in Johnny Manziel. Yeah, everybody's like, oh, Patriots are, you know, instead of the million people that are being released all the time.
Yeah, because I think it increased the number of players that you can bring in to work out pre-draft, and now you can bring in – you can have up to 30 visits. And so the Patriots are picking really low on the draft. Like, who are they going to bring in? Like, yeah, I'll bring in Manziel. See what's up.
Yeah, but you want to – okay, before we get into that whole thing, because the thing about the Manziel visiting all these teams – you know, you have one team that has the number one pick. It can be traded, whatever, when we saw this in draft day. But part of me is wondering, like, is there such a thing as tanking your pro day? Like, let's say, for example, Johnny Manziel goes and visits the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Cleveland Browns, and they tell him something to – we don't know what's said in these meetings. We have no idea.
Yeah.
So what if they tell him, like, we will give you a better, you know, whatever contract. So he goes out during his pro day and just cocks it up on purpose. Is there such a thing as pro day tanking? I'm just like, again, this, I could be completely paranoid about this and that's fine, but could that happen? Why are they taking all these meetings with a guy if one team has that pick?
Yeah. I mean, to my knowledge, there isn't anything kind of like pro day tanking, although Teddy Bridgewater did actually have a really bad pro day, which it's, I mean, for one thing, it's really bad to have a bad pro day because pro days are designed for you to show off your skills and look the best you possibly can.
Right, but if there's a team that's telling you, hey, if you drop a little bit so that the number one team doesn't take you,
oh,
if
you're
you
end about, up... Yeah, yes, like for the visits?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
I mean, maybe. I know that Johnny Manziel has publicly said he does not want to go to Cleveland. I think Cleveland's going to take him.
To be fair, he's right. Yeah. Nobody wants to go to Cleveland.
Well, I think that it's bullshit that they get to determine where they go before they even get picked. I mean, I think that the whole point of being drafted is that, hey, I get to be a pro football player. Yeah. It doesn't really matter where I get to go. I'm going to make millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So for him to say, I'm not going to go to Cleveland is like, okay, yeah, Cleveland sucks. Everybody knows this. But would you rather not play football? Would you rather not make millions of dollars?
I get what you're saying, but then you got situations where people go to the Raiders, which was the graveyard of great football, college football players.
It really is.
And it's like, should they have to go to a team that's going to kill their career right when they get out?
I mean, by the rules of the NFL, yes.
Yes,
they do.
Unless you're a Manning.
But yeah, unless you have Archie Manning in your corner, and then it's just like, no, he pulls like the Obi-Wan's like, you don't want to go to San Diego.
I'm thinking more the Family Guy made just no.
But here's the thing: when we're talking about being meta, we're talking about the NFL kind of referencing football movies. You want to fall gracefully on that continuum more toward Joss Whedon and less toward Abed from Community, because then it gets out of control, and I don't want to see that day that the Oakland Raiders are investigated by the league for experimenting with this new performance-enhancing substance called flubber. Like, I don't want it to get to that point. I want the meta stuff to at least have a cap on it by then.
Well, what's even better is that if I read it right, any given Sunday wasn't even approved by the NFL. Like, they didn't have any NFL logos.
They're all fake teams.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all fake teams. There's some real players in there.
It was endorsed by Arena Football, I think, more than actually.
Well, and it was more like Arena Football than the NFL. I mean, a dude's eye popped out in that movie.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's weird. One of the hardest comparisons that you can make about Teddy Bridgewater, it's really hard to make a song that rhymes. Like, Willie Beeman had Steamin' Willie Beeman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just sounds nasty.
I don't want to get, like, we're talking about Cleveland before, so can we leave the steaming out of it?
Steaming, really beaming in Cleveland?
You said that, that people are already kind of judging Terry Bridgewater based on his pro day, and I think that's sort of like judging a movie trailer or a movie based on a movie trailer.
Yeah,
because a movie trailer is designed to show the best aspects of you. It's a highlight reel, and that's all what a pro day is.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether you throw 12 consecutive passes that are caught in a pro day. If you can throw 12 consecutive passes in an NFL game, that's what's going to matter.
The weird thing about NFL is NFL in general, for one, we talked about how there's too much time to scout these players, and they take such a fine microscope to everything, and people are trying to make football a much more scientific sport than it is, especially like this year or the past couple years when Nike has made the jerseys. Every year Nike touts these jerseys that are supposed to like make the players faster and like make them stronger, and it's like it's cloth, man.
It's like, wind resistance, man. I don't know.
Something. But Oregon's uniforms are always just fabulous.
Yeah, and Nike always touts how like these are just like the leading
The pro combat.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's cloth, man. Like,
yeah,
football's not that hard.
Until Under Armour actually starts making mithril, I don't want to hear it. Yeah. I don't want to hear it. Yeah.
Until, like, the uniforms have the same rules as Kill la Kill, I think it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
True story. Well, what's our next story, JC? I hear it's to bomb.
Yeah. So, Alden Smith has had himself quite the year. But a couple days ago, he was at LAX and going through security. And security takes a long time, as people are aware of if you've, you know, lived in the last decade. one thing people are also aware of if you've lived in the last decade is that there are a few words you should not say when you're in the security line.
In fact, Ben Stiller even knows that there's a word you can't say in an airport.
Bomb, 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 bomb. You gonna arrest me?
Yep.
And, yeah, that one.
Yep, that one. And Alden Smith said the word.
49ers linebacker, an obvious Mensa member, Alden Smith, decided to just blurt out and yell the one word you really can't, absolutely cannot say in an airport.
Yep. You can't say bomb at an airport. you just can't.
I mean, you can't say bomb. You shouldn't say fly United. No. But that is the one word you absolutely can't say.
But if you're on a plane, can you be like, I know this plane's going to go down. I have to get off this plane.
Only if you're Liam Neeson. If you're Liam Neeson, then it's like, how about that nonstop, though?
Yeah.
Then we're all fine with it. Alden Smith is a moron. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, there's no excuse for this. There's no, he was having a bad day.
You assaulted an airline
employee. What if I was in the military and I was a bombardier? Right, fuck that. It is the easiest thing in the world not to yell bomb at an airport.
Yeah.
I think even kids know that. Like, I think kids are now taught when they go into the airport for the first time. They're like, hey, don't say bomb. All right?
I agree he shouldn't have said bomb. That's a fucking dumbass move. But it does highlight that the TSA has a lot of goddamn power with limited training. And you get people with limited training, limited intelligence in a lot of sense. You give them a little bit of power.
Mm-hmm.
This is why you don't say bomb, because they're going to strip search your ass.
Well, yeah. From the other side of it, though, Alden Smith is someone with very little intelligence that they gave a lot of money to.
Yes.
So,
that's true.
And thinks he can say bomb in an airport.
I think the guy's a dumbass. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. He's 24 years old. This is his third arrest in the last, I think, 12 months.
See, here's the thing. When I was 24, I did a lot of stupid shit. I never said bomb in an airport. Yeah. I never did that because, you know, my brain still worked inside my skull.
The most I'll ever do when I'm going to the airport and I want to fuck with people is, like, I will grow my beard out and I'll bring, like, a really busted calculator.
Good.
And I'll start messing with, I'm not kidding. I do this all the time. I'm just like, if you're going to be racist, I might as well have some fun with it.
See, that is a luxury that we don't have, Elliot.
Yeah.
Being white, the worst we can be is fat enough to take up two seats. Like, that's how we fuck.
No, this is after, like, I got pulled out of the airline, the line for security randomly, and I was like, well, fuck it. If they're going to pull me out, I might as well have some fun with it.
How did that end up for you? How was Guantanamo? Was it sunny there?
I met a really funny Asian man and Indian man.
Oh, right on. Well, the one thing we can learn from this is what we already knew, so I guess we can move on, JC. What's our next story here?
So Ocho, well, his name's not Ocho Cinco anymore, Chad Johnson.
Wait a minute. Do we need to grab our binoculars? Are we actually going to have a Chad Johnson sighting?
We are. Well, I mean, they have to be really good binoculars because he signed with the Montreal Alouettes.
Zing!
Canadian football
fan. They got to see all the way to Canada. Wow. Oh, yeah, my God. Chad 85 Johnson has apparently signed with the Canadian football team, the Montreal Alouettes.
Yeah, I have a question.
I have several.
You speak, being somebody who can speak French, can you sing that song again?
Alouettes, gentil Alouettes. Alouettes, gentil Boumerie. Gentil Boumerie, gentil Boumerie.
That's his new last name, by the way. Chad, all of that. Chad, all of that.
It's going to be tough to fit that on a jersey.
Chad Champs-Élysées.
Yeah. So he signed a 2-year deal.
No. The word champ, that's too close to the word champ.
Oh, you're right.
I do hope he finds a nice, like, French-Canadian girl, though, that he can settle down with.
He's probably found a lot of French-Canadian girls over his life.
So he can hit her, too?
I was going to go there, but I decided not to.
Well, I like how you pulled out of that and then left me holding the bag.
Way to go. Chad Johnson hit a girl?
Yeah, no, he got arrested for domestic abuse.
Oh, yeah. Fuck's sake, Chad.
Yeah.
Like a couple months after marrying engaged or something.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, the NFL already doesn't think you're enough of a joke, so make sure you get, you know, an arrest for domestic abuse at an on there with your reality show and you're racing a horse and you're and this is completely true. TNA offering you the contract to fight your coach from the Bengals in a cage match in like 2011, 2010, something like that.
He also has a bed in which the headrest is this gigantic aquarium that cost him $300,000.
Are you shitting me right now?
Well, that's why he has to go to Canada to play football.
I just imagine Chad Ochocinco and Terrell Owens sitting at Denny's talking about how the world's not fair.
It's like, maybe except for Terrell Owens is probably going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Despite his best efforts.
Yeah, despite his best efforts.
To be a footnote. You know what? I think the Alouettes actually hired Chad Johnson from a personal ad that said desperately seeking relevance. So congratulations, Chad Johnson. I'm sure your next stop, the Philadelphia Soul Arena football team, will be just as profitable as the Montreal Alouettes.
Well, if there's one thing of value out of all of this, it shows children and adults that you have to be competent to do a job, but you also can't be a jackass.
Yep. And there is a threshold for how much jackassery the NFL, and I know it seems crazy, but there is actually a threshold for how much jackassery the NFL is willing to put up with.
Goodell's like, no, I'm not going there. this is the line, Ochocinco, you've crossed it.
And that, you know, with the goalpost being in the front of the end zone, can you imagine the touchdown dances he can construct? He's gonna actually pole dance. It's gonna be amazing.
Yeah. Like, I was actually trying to think of the gauge. No, it's the Ochocinco gauge.
Yes, it is.
Like, it's the Ochocinco line.
It only goes from 8 to 5. Anyway, what's our next story, JC?
So it involves the NCAA and kind of how they treat their athletes.
What?
So,
wait, are you suggesting they don't treat their athletes that well?
You mean they're slaves, right?
Yeah.
I will not have you casting aspersions on the great work. I can't even say it with a straight face. Yeah. I'm sorry.
So we've talked about how the things they're not able to do. They're not able to, like, hold jobs. They're not able to, like, have somebody buy them plane tickets to, like, go back home and visit their family.
Right.
A lot of things they can't do. Well, it wasn't until 3 weeks ago UConn basketball guard Shabazz Napier told reporters that he's gone to bed hungry before, and the reason why is because the NCAA doesn't allow Division I athletes to have more than 3 meals and 3 snacks a day.
Now, okay, so the new ruling, and I want to be very clear about this, and then I want to say something about it because I know the knee-jerk reaction to this, but it seems now, thanks to the NCAA, that an eventual career in the NBA is not the only meal ticket available to NCAA athletes. Because the new ruling says they can have basically as many meals and snacks as they want on their meal plan. And I know, guys, I know a lot of us grew up as geeks in a very biased, unbalanced system wherein the jocks were showered with special consideration. And sometimes that can leave a lingering resentment that can color our perceptions of stories like this. I get that. Okay, if that's how this story is striking you, I urge you to consider how hard college athletes, particularly football and basketball players, are worked.
Yeah, they burn.
And how much is expected of – exactly. This is a question of science.
Yeah.
When you have people that are expending thousands and thousands and thousands of calories every single day, three meals is not going to cut it. And the bigger problem, honestly, is that there are hours on all of these dining halls. And all of these dining halls, basically, while these guys are at practice – while they're at meetings, while they're at, you know, studying the video, it is not conducive to getting to a dining hall by a certain time within the 3-meal structure. You have to be here for breakfast, here for lunch, here for dinner, and then that's all you get. It just doesn't work.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the fact that the NCAA has basically made athletes do this all of these years is really cruel.
Yeah.
Like Jalen Rose used to talk about. There's a great documentary about the Fab Five talking about how they used to go to bed hungry.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that. Like, even internally, they can't keep their shit together, the NCAA.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like, I think people have the idea of, like, what athletes want misconstrued. And it's like, I mean, maybe they want to get paid. I'm not of the thought that they should necessarily get paid while in college. But, I mean, unlimited meals, that's so obvious.
Yeah, it's like,
how did you fuck that up for nearly as many years as you have? Like, that's so obvious.
I mean, if you look at let's not even go to football, but I remember reading an article back in the 08 Olympics how much Michael Phelps was eating when he was training.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're
like an oil drum full of pasta. Yeah.
He was just like burning through calories, just as mean calories he could get because he was working out so much. You got these players just killing themselves. I'm sorry, they're going to need the fourth meal.
Yep.
Not because they're stoned, because they are fucking tired and hungry.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like people say the university gives them meal plans and things like that. Well, if you're a college kid, an athlete, you can't have a job and it's midnight. You're hungry, you want a pizza, you can't order one.
These people with old meal plans, they've never actually – they might not have been to college, because I remember when my meal plan – The dining hall was closed on weekends.
Yeah.
So you have to walk your happy ass down to the union. I don't have a car. So I would bring Tupperware on Fridays and load up because I don't have any money to spend.
Yeah.
So I remember back at LSU, a lot of the times the players would have people get the food for them and just send them Tupperware and you'd have to know the cafeteria workers. They didn't give you a hard time about it.
Yeah. I mean, we can argue all day about whether or not these kids should be paid for what they're doing, considering how much money the colleges are making off of them. But for God's sakes, let them eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not saying in the way that it's like, you know, when Gary Oldman shows up in a shitty movie where Gary Oldman's got to eat. No, I mean actually eat.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like, I'm surprised this didn't come up earlier because in February this past year, Oklahoma had to self-report themselves to the NCAA because at one point the student athletes ate more pasta than they're allowed to eat.
Oh my God. That fucking story made me so mad.
Is that a fettuccine provision or something?
No, it was like, it's like, really, you're measuring the amount of pasta these kids are allowed to eat you're licensing their number and face in a video game and making millions. Go fuck yourself, NCAA. I mean,
there's getting over on people, and then there's just being a dickhole.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna say good on you, NCAA, for this. You should have been doing this for years. This is the smallest possible concession you could have made.
Yeah.
You should have been doing this all along, so no, you don't get any props.
Yeah, you don't get credit when you're like, oh.
We should actually feed the students that are in our care. And we've claimed up and down that the whole reason for their being here is the education. It's like, yeah, but not killing them is also a good thing to do, you fucking reprobates.
I mean, they're already working 40 hours a week and trying to go to class. More. And trying to study. And maybe have a social life. And if they do anything out of the ordinary, they get their scholarships cut because of oversigning, but they can't eat enough.
Yeah, it's like when Chris Rock goes on that bit where people brag about how they've never been to jail. Well, you're not supposed to go to jail, asshole. Yeah.
What, you want a cookie?
Want some credit for some shit they're supposed to do.
Yeah. So the next story we're going to talk about here, I'm going to preface by saying,
there's rumors in the Twitter sphere.
And specifically what I'm talking about is University of Kentucky coach John Calipari being linked via a single tweet, right? Calipari sounds like a delicious, but you know what? Don't have too much of it because the NCAA will fine you. But Calipari has been linked via a single tweet by former Kentucky star Rex Chapman to the Los Angeles Lakers head coaching job, saying he's going to go take that job. That comes quite a shock to Calipari, as well as current Lakers coach Mike D'Antoni, who hasn't been fired yet, though. Yeah. I got to say, at this point, the wedding table is set, and D'Antoni is Robb Stark. But anyway, he hasn't been fired as of yet. So
I think it was more of a situation of Rex Chapman thinking to himself, hey, you know what people haven't done in a while? Talk about me.
No, I think JC's right.
That's absolutely correct.
Because you get columnists do that shit all the time. I'm going to put out something that's complete horseshit.
Rex Chapman's like, people keep thinking I'm Rex Grossman on Twitter for some reason. I'm going to make a distinction. But you know, you're right, Elliot. The sports media world has run with this, and they're speculating left and right, and they're picking apart his every response. Is he really staying in Kentucky? Is he in fact going to the Lakers? I have this message for the majority of sports media. Stop acting like TMZ. These guys are foaming at the mouth to break the story, and they've been utilizing strawman argument after strawman argument as to why he is definitely going to the Lakers. There are more strawmen being constructed around this question than Oz the Great and Powerful.
Yeah.
It is fucked up.
So one thing I do want to bring up regarding John Calipari, he's been on a book tour because he wrote a book.
That he's a fucking bastard.
Yeah, he is. He runs dirty programs.
Yeah, he ruins every program that he's ever been a part of.
He's been linked to some underhanded. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, and he's a very good salesman. He's a very good salesman. He was on radio all this week, and at one point I was just kind of listening to him and go, "Hey, you know what? Maybe he's not a no."
Yeah.
But anyway, so he was on Bill O'Reilly, and
you're selling me here.
Yeah, it's two people who are both awful.
That's what you're saying. That's an awful waffle.
Yeah. But at one point, Bill O'Reilly is asking him questions, and I don't know if Bill O'Reilly is just this out of touch with the world today.
Oh, he totally is.
He was asking John Calipari the craziest questions. I encourage you guys to go to Deadspin and look at this. But among the questions, Bill O'Reilly goes, he goes, so when your players go out with a girl and the girl said, hey, you raped me, or there's drugs everywhere and people are giving away free drugs to the kids, like, how do you keep the players away from that? And Calipari is like, how am I supposed to answer that question?
Yeah.
Do I stand there and watch them at every fucking second of the day?
It's Bill O'Reilly, culture warrior.
Yeah.
Of course, that's the way he labels himself, as he's like this sort of bastion of like cultural like relevancy.
A very specific niche of a very specific culture, perhaps.
Because at one point he even asked John Calipari, quote, what about the hip-hop? Do your kids listen to hip-hop?
I'm sorry, did I sleep and get put back in time in this 1991 round?
Yeah. Hip-hop? Is he still concerned about Two Live Crew?
Yeah.
Is that his big argument
what
against
hip-hop? The hip-hop, and do your kids speak four-letter words at you? And John Calipari's like, no.
Here's how I know Bill O'Reilly's full of shit, is that every year that
he's on Fox News.
Well, yeah, but every year that the Fox News, that whole thing talks about the war on Christmas, Do you hear any shit about war on Easter? It's Holy Week this week. It's Easter week. It's Holy Thursday today that we record this.
No, because
this.
They love chocolate. I mean, you know, for all his blustering, Bill O'Reilly really loves chocolate bunnies. But he calls them minority-majority bunnies. Because he still believes that the white race is being subsumed.
He likes the idea of bunnies laying eggs. Yeah. Like, that makes sense to him. Wait, and so he's like, the Playboy
thing here. I feel like he gets mad when he sees Easter baskets. He's like, how did those bunnies get in this basket? They snuck across. We gotta send them back.
They're hiding in the grass.
Back to Calipari, though. Sorry. Are you guys going to be surprised, though, if he does take the Laker job?
No,
I mean,
of course. But the thing that kills me is, like, my favorite argument for why he's definitely going to L.A., this is totally real. I've heard this several times. Well, he's been talking about the Lakers a lot lately, way too much to not be going there. Well, blimey, you solved the case, Cumberbatch. That's your smoking gun? Can a gun smoke after a misfire of this proportion? He's been talking about the Lakers a lot because that's all you squawking hens have been asking him about. What else you got? I mean, you could still very well go to L.A., or he could stay in Kentucky, but stop posturing that you have the irrefutable evidence of either, because you do not. Hey, geniuses, A-Rod talked about innocence a lot. Your move, Bobby Fischer.
I will say he can't do much wrong in the NBA. He can't break as many rules. It's like,
Well, I mean, he's gone there and failed.
Oh, I know. Yeah. But, I mean, if he goes to the Lakers, though, I mean, yeah. I will say that
there's nowhere to go, nowhere for them to go but up.
Yeah, and because they're, like, last in the conference this year or something. Yeah. They were
well,
dead,
like,
you know.
I talk a lot about Pacific Rim. That doesn't mean I'm going to be fucking piloting a Jaeger anytime soon. I mean, people talk about shit. I think JC hit on the head right at the beginning. This is just people who are bored, they need column inches.
Yep.
We got to make up a story to gin it up, and then the story becomes the story, and they can talk about how bad sports media is, and then they can talk, and just it feeds itself until something real happens.
So you're saying it's like, is this an AT-AT foot story?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Just making
you
sure.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up, because the real reason that I wanted to talk about this today is to draw a parallel to something quite familiar to geeks like us, and that parallel happens to wear thick-rimmed glasses and currently holds the keys to the proverbial kingdom, J.J. Abrams.
Oh, the liar.
The sports media has become as obsessed with the prospect of Calipari doth protesting too much as we movie geeks refuse to believe the emphatic statements of Mr. Abrams when he says things like, Khan isn't going
to
be in Star Wars.
What am I to say?
Or in Star Trek, or, oh, you know, we're not going to do this in Star Wars. It's like, okay, but if we're going to hang on every single thing the guy says, or every image, as Tyler, like, there was a set image today that people, I swear to God, became like forensic scientists. Like, well, if you examine this picture from this angle and you use, you know, super glue and irradiated materials to lift, I'm like, okay, it might be an AT-AT foot. It might just be a piece of round metal.
Yeah. that's going to be sitting out in the middle of the desert, and that's it. That's all it's going to be doing.
Unbelievable.
And you know what? It might be an AT-AT foot. Who gives a shit?
Exactly. It's like,
it means that there's going to be an AT-AT foot somewhere in the movie.
There might be a foot somewhere.
Yes, somewhere in the movie.
That's something about...
Great. Congratulations.
That's something about movie geeks that I get why they do it, but it's something I just don't understand, because, like, there's so much great media out there these days. Like, if you're bored,
well, see, here's a
like maybe on one of us.
I don't know if you know this, Elliot, but there's these things called hits, and they drive traffic, and then that traffic drives ad revenue.
You mean hit horn?
And because that's the only way that these motherfuckers
Tyler,
can keep their $100,000.
Can you write this down for me?
Yearly salaries
in like an email and send it to me, because I don't understand anything you just said.
I mean, what you're selling me is sort of a BuzzFeed to me. It's something. I'm getting a lot of College Humor off of it.
Fact that you can write more than 200 words.
My perceptions here.
I like this.
The fact that you can write more than 200 words about a foot, a possible AT-AT foot in a fucking photo from a Star Wars set is unbelievable to me.
Elliot, I will say this. I liked your slate of jokes.
What I would tell people, I'm talking about the fans, though. Like,
I
get you have the whores that are like, well, no, we need the hits. I get that. But the fans, if you got a fan, I used to be this fan when I was in middle school. I loved Star Trek. Everything Star Trek I had to digest, I wanted to see all of it. What I would tell them is like, look, there's so much great stuff out there. Especially if you're only 13, you never got exposed to all the great shit in the 90s. Go watch Buffy, go watch Angel, and then you'll watch Doctor Who, go watch all the Star. Like, and by the time you get through all of that, your Star Wars movie will be out for you.
So your question is like, why do people even care about reading this stuff?
Well, just get on with your life.
Here's the answer: cable news. Okay. 24/7 news cycle has created
it. Maybe it's
for
not
everything.
Even me.
No, that's the thing, Elliot. It's not. and this is something I've learned going from, you know, writing on the internet to running a website, is it's not everybody who cares about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is a very select portion of the population. No, that has like this tertiary sort of interest in film.
Okay.
All they're interested in is the big stuff.
Okay.
And all they really care about is like, ooh, this is a really big deal.
Okay.
Because they're told it's a big deal.
Okay.
But people like us, you know, people like, I'm happy to say people like our readers, they don't give a shit about that because they know that it's not about seeing this image ahead of time. It's not about, oh, this rumor, that rumor.
Yeah.
It's all about the final product. And what we do is we watch that final product and we discuss it, and that's it. That is all we care about.
If I had told you a year ago that there's going to be this movie by some writers from Community, it's going to be an action movie, how's that going to turn out?
Yeah.
You've been like if you weren't reasonable, you'd be like, well, that's going to be horrible. But then you get Captain America 2, one of the best.
And then everybody – but what's funny about that is everybody thought that.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, the Russo brothers are doing this. They only did You, Me, and Dupree, and they forget that they actually did a few good episodes of Community.
Here's the thing, and I'm not one of those I told you so guys, but as soon as that got announced, I was like, that's great.
Because
if there is one TV show that knows how to treat geek properties, it's Community.
Yeah.
I absolutely want those guys in charge.
Yeah. It's a well shot TV show. And so like for me, you know, like of course I was a little skeptic. I wasn't really skeptic because of who was in charge though. I was more of a skeptic of the subject matter, which to be all fair, it was awesome.
Yes.
The movie was great. My criticisms were very few, and after I watched it, I was not worried about it at all.
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra. But I think that it really, there's something about these major properties that gets people into a frenzy about anything.
Yeah.
And I think it's strange whether, and you know what, it's even gotten to the point where it's certain TV shows.
Yeah.
Where like
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, or even Doctor Who. It's like who's gonna be the next Doctor Who? Who's gonna be the next companion?
No, there was a bullshit story the other day about how the ratings are going down when they're not. The quality's going down a little bit, but just these stories people
hear
so much.
Yeah, and so and I would be lying if I wasn't part of the problem in that I, you know, if I'm on my phone and I see a link about something that I'm vaguely interested in, I'm going to click it because you know what? I'm not doing anything.
Well, I'll give you an example of things that interest me are things like I just found out about as we were about to record, which is that Sirian Foy is going to be directing Sinister 2.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Sirian Foy is a director that I really like. Citadel I thought was great. And obviously, you know, Sinister 2 is co-written by our friend Cargill.
Co-host
of Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Thank you, Elliot.
Listen to it.
That's
pretty damn good.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you.
I'm not kidding. I listened to it. I actually.
No, I'm glad you're not kidding. If you're kidding, I'd be really offended.
No. I mean, like, back on Spill, like, two of my favorite people was, like, that's how, actually how Brian and I met. Two of my favorite people was Brian and Cargo, because Cargo always brings that different perspective.
Yeah.
That like
he's,
I really
he's a little
done.
Out there like I am, and that's you know that's
anybody
that's why we
who
get
can
along.
Unironically love Armageddon as much as I do, so you got a fan in me.
There you go, there you go. But yeah, I mean, like that kind of thing, I'm interested in because those are projects I'm interested in. But like, I try not to get wrapped up in like, oh, this latest casting rumor for Star Wars episodes. Like, I don't care. Just show me the movie when it's done.
Well you don't. You
I don't
hear
see all
those
the ingredients.
Things.
Just serve me the damn cake.
You don't hear those things about movies like Sinister 2. You'll get an announcement of the director, possibly an announcement of the writers.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly an announcement of who's releasing it.
Yeah.
And then you'll get a trailer 4 months before it comes out. And that's it. That's all. And maybe a poster.
And I completely admit that the reason I'm interested in that is because I have a personal interest in everybody that's making, and that's fine. But it's like, I feel like that's what you, when you develop a, you know, just even a fandom of a certain thing, like, fine, be interested in that, but don't just click on things because they're the big things and because those headlines want you to. I don't know how we got on this discussion, but here we are.
Off
the rails. little aside. There it is. So before we wrap up the news section, I feel like we need to talk about the NBA playoff picture.
Yeah. Well, before that, we can kind of have a quick little regular season roundup. I think handing out of the regular season awards of how I would have them if I had a vote, which I don't.
I'm not being sarcastic. You should have a vote because you've been spot on this entire year.
JC is kind of eerie with his predictions.
So the MVP, of course, is going to go to Kevin Durant. 32 points a game, 7 rebounds, nearly 6 assists. A lot of people are going to give LeBron, my favorite player, second in the voting. But one thing, and it's kind of become an interesting thing in the past couple of years, you know, the people who get second, third, and fourth place in the voting becomes kind of a story in and of itself. What I wish would happen, what I, my order of voting would actually be Kevin Swaggy Durant. P. Nope, not Swaggy P.
Thank God.
Kevin Durant, Blake Griffin, Joakim Noah, who I hate, and LeBron James fourth.
Wow, that is you being super objective.
Yeah, Blake Griffin.
Can you please do me a favor? Will you go work for ESPN, like right the hell now?
Too much integrity.
You are the Heat fan I want working for ESPN.
Yeah. The Dark Knight.
Yeah, Blake Griffin gets a bad rap. People think he's just the athletic dunker. If you've watched any Clippers games, Clippers are one of the people I had in League Pass this year. There are times this year, especially when Chris Paul was injured, Blake Griffin would have the ball. He would back it out, and he would institute a pick and roll with DeAndre Jordan. No other power forward in the league does things like that. Yep. Yeah, Dirk Nowitzki is the recipient of a pick and roll. That happens all the time. The power forward never goes out and initiates a pick and roll with a center.
Dirk like, also can't dribble.
Insane. Yeah, Dirk can't dribble.
Yeah.
Joakim Noah, the Bull. As soon as Derrick Rose went out, everybody wrote the Bulls off. Everyone except for Joakim Noah. Joakim Noah is somebody who one of the first people ever. I think you could give an MVP vote just for his heart. Like
his
dude stats has passion.
Yeah, his stats don't jump out at you. 12.6 points a game, 11.3 rebounds, 5 assists, which is actually a lot for a center, and 1 block. But I hate the dude, but you can't dispute his passion.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And again, I appreciate you being objective because I got to hand it to ESPN and their backflipping, spineless contortion skills in order to further fillet the Heat, even when they aren't deserving of it.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean this. After do you know how much press ESPN got off the Pacers Heat? Who's going to be number one? Who's going to be number one? And then this whole time, all we hear is the Heat talking trash like, oh, well, they're number one now, but they're not going to be number one at the end. Or, oh, they really hate us, so we hate them. And meanwhile, the Pacers are just like, oh, okay, we're going to play basketball if that's cool with you guys.
Yeah.
And yet, instead of congratulating for the Pacers for winning the top seed, ESPN claimed, I wish I was making this up because it sounds like I am. I'm not. You can go back and look at this episode. That the Heat were actually smarter for intentionally aiming for the second seed all along. I'm going to repeat that. They actually gave the Heat credit for going after the second seed all along. So like, that was their master plan.
They strategically tanked so that they wouldn't get the first seed, but then they also wouldn't get the third seed, but they tanked specifically for the second seed.
So are the Heat Loki now in this?
Thank you. That was my first thought. Are they every major supervillain in a blockbuster in 2012?
Well, no, it's fine.
Do you remember how 2012 was the year of I wanted to get caught all along?
It got fucking old real quick.
That is exactly what the ESP... Like, and here's my new theory. ESPN has been infiltrated by Hydra. That is what all of this is. It finally makes sense to me. All of the fact that...
But
that,
Hydra's competent. I mean, like...
You know what? And Hydra doesn't give a shit about Twitter either. It doesn't spend entire segments talking about athletes' Twitter accounts. Well,
Hydra stays the fuck off Facebook.
Hydra does stay the fuck off Facebook. Yeah. There's too many tentacles. I mean, they could reach a lot more people. Like, literally, when it says your Facebook post has reached this many people, it says via your tentacles
for
Hydra.
Well, Hydra's big in Japan, so...
Hydra is big in Japan. But I mean, ESPN, you are to the Miami Heat what Fox News is to the Republican Party. And I can't do it anymore. I give up on you entirely.
Yeah.
Some of the other big stories in, I guess we should actually say that, in the West, it's the Spurs, the Mavericks, the Rockets, the Trailblazers, the Thunder, the Grizzlies, who won their spot on like their very last game.
Yeah.
Which was pretty impressive. The Clippers and the Warriors all. I mean,
those are great matchups.
It was kind of one of those things, like, if it had turned out Oklahoma got the 3 seed, like, I don't have a vote, but, like, I would have made a major push for Blake Griffin to get MVP for leading his team to a 2 seed because, I mean, Durant had the better year, but are you going to give the MVP award to a guy who couldn't get better than second in his conference? But they ended up getting the second seed, so Durant deserves it. But.
And then in the East, we have the Pacers, the Hawks, the Bulls. And these are not in seeded order. These are just in the order they're on the bracket.
It doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't. Well, unless you're the Heat, and then that's the one you wanted all along. You're the smartest team who ever played
from
basketball.
From the beginning of the year. We're going to get the second seed, guys.
I love it. I feel like the Heat go to their opponent. You must be truly desperate to face me.
You have.
Well, it's kind of one of those things, like, why I would give LeBron fourth in the MVP voting, because for 3 quarters of the season, dude could not have given less of a shit.
Right? And I'm just imagining how, like LeBron, like, I am burdened with glorious purpose. not one purpose, not two purposes.
But a whole pod of purposes. So wait a second, I got that wrong.
The Pacers, the Hawks, the Bulls, the Wizards, somehow.
they're like, what the fuck are we doing here?
The Heat, the Bobcats, the Raptors, and against all odds, The Brooklyn Nets are in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
Remember the beginning of the season where Brooklyn looked like the Washington Generals and every other team were the Harlem Globetrotters?
Yeah, and Jason Kidd looked like the worst coach of,
Throw some water on me.
He's not getting fired now.
Well, I think they still should fire his ass. I think if they lose in the first round, they still have enough of a reason
to. Who are they facing?
They're playing Toronto. It's not going to be a good time for him if
Toronto's
they lose Toronto.
Toronto's on a winning streak right now.
Toronto is actually tough, and so are the Wizards, surprisingly.
They got that one kid. What's his name? Who's like
Kwame Brown?
He's a future All Star. Is it really Kwame Brown? Are you just fucking with me? Don't do this.
Washington's got John Wall, who's their big guy.
Sell some grills.
So, out of both conferences,
I loved him on Wise Guy.
Who would you guys pick as a potential like upset? Like kind of a team that's like sort of like
a team that they haven't been talking about.
That they haven't really been talking about, and that may not necessarily win the conference, but has a you know, like, watch out for them. They might actually.
I'm
going to
go with the Bulls, frankly.
Yeah.
If Joakim Noah keeps inspiring his team and they keep playing with the same amount of passion that they have been, they can definitely beat the Wizards. I mean, they're probably going to come up against the Pacers in the second round if all goes well.
And they'll play the Pacers tough.
Yeah. So. I'm thinking the Nets, actually. And here's why. Yeah. They've got the experience.
Of losing.
Well, no, but, I mean, they've got the experienced players.
Since January 1st, 2014, they've actually been, I think they've been the best team in the East.
And think about when those guys were with the Celtics. Yeah. I mean, the Celtics always weren't great going into the playoffs. But as soon as they got into the playoffs, they were good. So it's like, you know, and I know it's not the entire Celtics team, but it's a good portion of the
And
Celtics
the interesting
team.
Thing is if Brooklyn does get to the second round, they play the winner of the Miami-Charlotte round, and Brooklyn did go 4-0 against
Brooklyn, they went hard. Yeah. They went hard.
So that'll be
interesting. Yeah. That'll be an interesting setup, yeah.
Cross that bridge, face the circumstance.
Yeah, so they swept the Miami Heat 4-0, although three of those games were 1-point victories. And one,
I vote for whatever team Michael Jordan comes back to, whether it's the Bulls or the Nets. Whichever one.
What do you guys think about the West?
The Montreal Alouettes. What? I'm sorry?
What do you guys think about the West?
Well, the Clippers Clippers have an easy draw in the first round because Golden State is going to be without Andrew Bogut, who broke his ribs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Golden State's got nothing on the inside to stop DeAndre and Blake.
I think the West is a situation where it's anybody's game.
Yeah.
Whereas the East, it's like, who is going to stand up to the Pacers or the Heat?
Yeah.
But in the West, it is wide. It's literally the Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
Wiki Wild.
James West. Rough Rider. Oh, you don't want nada.
None of this six gun in this brother running this Buffalo Soldier. Look, it's like I told you. We could keep doing this all day.
But I just peed my pants a little.
I tell you, the thing about the West, I really do not like the San Antonio Spurs, but I respect them. They know how to win. For me, it comes down to San Antonio and OKC. Those are going to be the two teams that I'm thinking are going to be the ones.
Yeah, and San Antonio is always the team every year that's winning like crazy and doing amazing, and nobody's talking
because
about
it's
it.
It's because they've had the same team for the last 10 years.
Yeah, and they're always good. Like, I don't understand why that, like, we're tired of talking about the good team isn't the Heat.
It's a really solid team.
It's really well put together. They know what they're doing.
It's kind of the same way with the Pacers, really. I mean, you know, you got Paul George, but, like, other than that, everybody's just really, really solid.
They're non-evil version of the Patriots.
There's the non-evil version of the Patriots, like the old school Patriots with the happy little guy. Yeah.
Like, the Patriots are really well put together, but we hate them because Tom Brady and Belichick and all that.
You can't hate Tim Duncan.
We hate them because he's married to
I can hate Tom Brady.
Tim Duncan.
I'm sorry. I thought she was like, no, I can hate Tom
Tyler's
Brady.
Tyler's from Indiana. He's never going to tell you can't hate on Tom Brady.
Tom Brady could disappear for the rest of everywhere.
That's why I was surprised. I knew that. I was like,
if Tom Brady disappears the way Jimmy Hoffa did,
I would not care.
Okay, that's why. I'm sorry. That's why I got confused.
Actually, Belichick would be a better
No, that's true. Somebody should give him a hiding.
But they're both really well put together teams, but the San Antonio is just so – they're so well put together and they pass so much, they play such good fundamental basketball, it's boring to talk about.
Completely ironic and fitting, poetic, would it be if they found out that Bill Belichick, after he disappears, has been folded into the Giants stadium? Because that's what they think Hoffa is he's part of the foundation of Giants stadium. It's like, that would be like the ultimate justice. Anyway, a couple other big stories before we wrap up as part of the NBA playoff picture. This is the first time in 18 years that Carmelo Anthony has not made the postseason.
Yep.
18 years?
His 18-year career, he has made the playoffs every single year except this one. So, of course,
11
year,
I think, actually.
Oh, is it 11? I'm sorry.
I'm about to say, like, Jesus Christ.
Sorry, he's not Peyton Manning. It's an 11-year career, excuse me, that he hasn't made the playoffs. So everyone's asking, of course, does this mean he's going to leave the Knicks? I'm not completely sold on that idea, but, I mean, it is going to affect him, I think.
Yeah, it's one of those things where kind of you follow it and you have to know about the way salary works a little bit. the most money he can make is by staying with the Knicks. Anywhere he goes, the most money he can make is going to be $17 million less than if he leaves the Knicks.
Right.
So he's got 17 million reasons to stay with the Knicks.
But if he wants to be good, it means he's probably going to have to go to a different team.
Probably. Yeah.
And so it's one of those things. And if he stays at the Knicks, if he wants to get good players to surround him, he has to take less money.
That's the thing. Is teaming up with Dwayne Wade, that could win you a championship. Teaming up with Amari Stoudemire, no.
Yeah, and I can guarantee you that Phil Jackson is going to sit him down and say, look, I can't get anybody else.
See, that's the only thing.
I can't get anybody else with you on the roster.
That's the only thing I think might keep him in New York is Phil Jackson.
Oh, yeah. And so I think Phil Jackson is going to convince him.
Yeah, the legacy.
To stop
winning.
The bullshit and say, look, dude, you're going to have to pass a little bit more.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to take $7 million
less.
And I tell you,
he should take less because I love watching Olympic basketball. It's one of my favorite things. And when you watch Olympic basketball the last two times, what you realize is Melo is so great as a secondary player. When he's open, he'll make every shot, but he is Pippen. He's not Jordan. Like he's not that guy. He just, he can't pull a team the same way. But if he's a great second guy, you get him on a team with he can be a compliment.
Let me just put it this way. With Phil Jackson in New York, don't know why you'd say Melo would say goodbye. Goodbye, goodbye.
Goodbye.
we should just kill me.
I love that song.
So the other kind of minor story out of the playoff picture is that the Lakers aren't in the playoffs, you might have noticed.
But
Kobe decides to take to Twitter and say his team had this is not verbatim and only that he edited it out, but essentially he said they had a shit season with the little asterisks, asterisk.
Yeah.
He said they had a shit season. And my question is, isn't that like the grasshopper telling the ant that he isn't working hard enough? Mm. Yeah, that's right. I just threw in a nod to an insect-centric parable from our childhood. Deal with that.
The other important thing about that tweet is he sent it before they had played their last game, and he sent it from France. Yeah.
I want to take this part. You know what? I talk a lot, and I bullshit a lot. I want to just take this time to say I was wrong to JC, because JC was pissed about there was a deal where they gave Kobe more money to stay in LA, and I was like, maybe, you know what, I was wrong. They should have just let Kobe go and said fuck you and rebuilt.
The guy's sitting there on the Champs-Élysées getting his toes licked by French prostitutes as they're bringing him escargot, and's like, yeah, my team had a shit year. It's like, you know what? Just retire.
Yeah, just go away.
Give it up. Just vanish from the earth.
Like, you're never going to be what you want it to be. You're a dickhole and nobody likes you. Just leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shit, even Calipari may not come to your team because of your ass. Yeah. That's impressive.
The only person coming to LA is probably Kobe, and this is definitely never coming. It's fine.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And it's met with a lot of resistance, if you know what I mean.
Because
he's a racist.
Only in Colorado.
What? Anyway, that is going to do it for our news section. We're going to take a short break here. And then, of course, coming up in segment two is... Okay, one more time. The Totally Accurate, Desperately Necessary Movie Elimination Tournament! Twice, guys. Twice in one show.
You've gotten really good at that now that we're not going to do it anymore.
Oh, motherfucker. You know what? I had a shit year with those. I'm just going to point that out. I had a shit year with pronunciation.
I can't get over that.
Hashtag flush it. Hashtag amnesia, like Kobe said.
I can't get over that. How shitty of a person do you have to be to do nothing for your team all year, take them before they even fucking done, and be like, oh, we had a shit year. Go fuck yourself.
He's Kobe.
He didn't even want to take the team photo at the end of the year.
Jerk.
He said he didn't want to be associated with a team that was that far under 500.
Like, Dwight Howard made the right decision.
Fire him immediately. He has become a Terrell Owens-sized cancer
on the
LA Lakers.
I want to ask y'all a question. I want to ask the Katy Perry question. Who's your dark horse this year for the playoffs in the NBA?
Well, I'm ready for the Golden State Warriors to do. Like, I love Steph Curry. I watched that guy play in college, and he was mesmerizing. And I really would like that team, or the Clippers. Like I would say Golden State or the Clippers, man. If either one of those guys wins the championship, I will be happy. Even if it's over I love the Pacers to death. I'm an Indiana guy. I love the Pacers. I'll be ecstatic if they win. But if it were the Warriors or the Clippers, I would be happy with that too.
If I had to go dark horse, I would say Houston. I like Houston a lot.
For winning the whole thing.
Like just out of left field, dark horse.
Maybe the Heat.
What the dear listeners don't know is that was fucked with Ryan before we started recording.
I think I'm going to say the Rockets too. I mean, I think they're a pretty good all around team. I'd say watch out for the Blazers though.
Oh hell yeah, the Blazers!
Watch out for the Blazers.
The Blazers for the longest time had the best record in the NBA.
I don't know that they're going to win the whole thing. But
do you remember that tweet?
Man, they're tough.
Do you remember that tweet from like I think about 5 months ago where the Blazers was like, hey, can we be in the East? can we please just be in the East?
And the Pacers were like, yeah, come on over. Yeah. And then the Heat were like, y'all need to stop talking trash about us. And it's like, okay, we give up. We're done, guys. All right, well, that's going to do it for this segment. We'll return with the tournament in just a moment. That's all. Well, here it is, guys. The big tamale, the crown jewel, the third inserted cliche, the sports movie tournament. This is the one we've been building up to. This is going to be the last tournament for a while. And, man, we're pretty excited to run through this one for a couple of different reasons. I mean, we have, with the help of you, our loyal listenership, whittled the field of 64 down to the Sweet 16. And there were some pretty massive upsets in the voting rounds. You guys were taking no prisoners, and I kind of love that about you. But as you know, we can't do a tournament without having a referee. And joining us as our very special guest referee is Mr. Ryan McCann, former Cincinnati Bengals quarterback and current actor. Welcome, Ryan.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you so much.
When you say
former Cincinnati Bengals quarterback, as you read in the article, it was a very brief moment with the Cincinnati Bengals quarterback.
It's still a lot more time than any of us have had on the field with the Cincinnati Bengals.
I guess, you know.
And you know what? Anymore, to be honest, it's more time than most current Cleveland Browns quarterbacks get with their team. So you should feel honored by that.
Yeah.
Yeah, God, the poor Browns. I mean, I got a buddy that's from there, and he suffers.
The poor Browns. That sounds like a really unfortunate sexual maneuver.
The poor Browns. Yeah.
Like, oh, I got a poor Browns.
I gave
me
the poor Browns. Yeah, and you listeners might recognize Ryan as Mac Luster from the film within the film in Visioneers. I thought that was such an amazing send-up of, like, VHS-era action heroes. And how did that happen? I mean, I know you're going to explain it a little bit in the article, but, like, how do you end up in a movie like that?
You know, well, it was my my good buddy from UCLA who was directing it. His brother had written it. And I came on to produce. And, you know, when the time came for that, you know, someone to fill that role, they're like, man, you're perfect. Let's have you do it. And so, you know, I hit the weights and fulfilled that role of 80s awesomeness.
I love that it's so take no prisoners that at one point you're just like shooting old ladies and everything. And it's just like, as long as he gets to fire a gun and look awesome, it really doesn't matter where the bullets are going.
Exactly. You know, as in, you know, chaos is infecting, you know, these great parts of society that need to get taken down. And, you know, who doesn't enjoy, you know, and like crazy old ladies getting taken down by an 80s action hero.
Well, I certainly do. And I know you've got a Kickstarter going for a separate Mac Luster movie. And I just got one question for you. Can I please play the requisite out of shape henchman? You know, the guy that's like the producer's cousin. And that's why he's obviously in the movie. And they take all his lines of dialogue away because he's terrible.
I mean, there are plenty of roles that you can buy when the Kickstarter launches on Monday.
Awesome.
And, you know, I think, I mean, if I wasn't playing Mac Luster, I would definitely want to get killed by Mac Luster. So I say that.
It would be an honor. And that article, we're going to be publishing an article that you wrote for us. It's a really fantastic piece on your journey from, you know, from the NFL to being an actor to being in the film industry. And I think it's so spot on for this particular show because we've always tried to frame sports fandom into a context of some other form of geekery. And you know, as much as we're all sports fans, we're also big movie nerds. So it walks that line so perfectly. And I really want to thank you for putting that together for us.
Oh, for sure.
Well, you are here to referee probably the most important event of your or our entire lives, and that is, of course, the sports movie tournament. And the way it works is that we've all the four of us here have been assigned four movies apiece from the bracket, and we're going to go head-to-head with 1 minute apiece to tell you why our movie is better than the other guys, and based solely on the arguments, try to take your your feelings about the films completely out of it, and based solely on the arguments, you're going to tell us which film advances from round to round.
Got it.
Round one. Fight!
All right, so JC, we will watch with the minute on the clock for each of our debaters, and if my memory serves me correctly, we are going to be starting in the baseball division. Is that right?
Yes, and I forgot the rule of the higher seed goes first or last.
I believe
the higher seed goes last.
The higher seed goes last. Yes, that is correct.
You know the best thing about today?
What's the best thing about today?
Adam's not here, so he can't win again.
We have circumvented Adam winning every tournament by
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra, by keeping him from being here. But we're going to start with The Sandlot against Major League, which, JC, ooh, tell me again, who has got what there?
It's actually Sandlot versus A League of Their Own.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sandlot versus A League of Their Own. My mistake. Yes. My mistake.
That's still tough, though.
It's going to be very tough.
Beat Major League. Yeah.
That makes sense.
You know what? That's one of the lesser surprising things that happened. But anyway, so, okay, that's The Sandlot, which is my film, versus A League of Their Own, which is JC's. And since I have the higher seed, I'm going second. So I tell you what, JC, I'll keep your minute over here.
Okay.
All right, and as soon as I did,
we are the one.
Okay,
the old American League.
Here we go, and your minute starts now.
So, A League of Their Own is regarded as one of the classics in the sports movie genre. It is one of the few films that illustrates the importance of sports as a getaway from life. When the shit went down in World War II and all of the men had to go fight overseas, it wasn't just, the regular men and the celebrities and the athletes were left to kind of still be, the athletes in the U.S. Even guys like Joe DiMaggio went and fought during World War II, and with all the athletes gone, all the male athletes gone, who was left? Well, Major League Baseball decided to take it upon themselves to create a league in which women were able to showcase their their talents on the field, and this captures that beautifully, and it's one of the films that captures how important sports is as, to just make you forget about the doldrums of everything that's going on in life.
All right. Well, I will now give my minutes for The Sandlot, which I will start right now. JC is right. A League of Their Own really does capture a specific moment in American history, but the great thing about The Sandlot is that it captures a specific moment in everyone's life, and especially if you were a young kid growing up in the suburbs and you had that special place to kind of get away from everything and just be with your friends and play baseball, like just the great equalizer of everybody coming together on one field and just playing. And I like what they say in the movie, that they never keep score, the games never really end or begin, they're just always playing. I think that is so indelible to what it means to be a kid, especially a kid in the suburbs, where at any given time all you want to do is be outside and living in that world where you can just, pick up and play. And they capture the essence of childhood so well. And despite the fact that it takes place in the 60s, or I'm sorry, in the 50s, it translates so well. Even kids watching it today are going to go, oh, I have friends like that. Oh, yeah, we play baseball in that abandoned lot. Because that part of childhood has not changed from decade to decade. And that is my minute. Do you want to retort, Jason, or a rebuttal?
No.
Okay. All right. And then, Mr. McCann, it is up to you. Make your final verdict.
Well, yeah, I mean, you really hit me hard with the Sandlot. Sandlot wins it.
All right. Short and sweet and to the point. Sandlot moving on to the next round.
I thought that was going to be tough.
you took me right back to, 8, 9, 10 years old down at the park with my friends in suburbia.
Yeah, man. I lived in one of those neighborhoods where we would use the old abandoned church parking lot and get like, it's like, yay, concrete, that's a viable playing surface, let's go!
Nice.
Idiots.
I was just hoping JC would mention the Tom Hanks just pulling off just a jackass, just sitting there like just drunk out of his mind, just,
one of the best Hanks performances ever.
Yeah,
it's really, just incredible.
It really is. I was just kind of saving some stuff for maybe the second round.
And it also speaks to every one of us sitting here that every once in a while we'll just show up to do the show like, oh God, just don't even talk to me. I don't even know.
Yeah. Baseball? Who cries in baseball? There's no crying in baseball.
That is one of the best scenes in sports movie history. Yeah. And it illustrates the importance of hitting the cutoff man, UCL Puig.
I think I think those two movies are two of the most quotable movies of all time, and they went up against – I mean, The Sandlot is one of the most quotable movies of all time.
The League of Their Own is the only movie I quote every morning.
No, yeah, there you go.
There's like, when I get up to use the bathroom, I'm just like –
So the next up in the baseball division is going to be Moneyball, which is Elliot, versus Field of Dreams, which is Tyler. Tyler, you have the higher seed, which means Elliot goes first.
Okay.
Elliot, are you ready?
Yes.
Your minute begins now.
Moneyball is a recently produced film that surprisingly introduced us to not Brad Pitt as an Oscar-worthy actor, which we already know, but Jonah Hill is an Oscar-worthy actor. It also brought us Chris Pratt in a surprisingly dramatic turn. But it showed that one of the things that's essential about sports is adapting to changing circumstances. And it showed how if baseball is going to be concerned with getting on base, and that's what you need, you don't stick with something just because it's rote. Adapt to the field and then change your approach. So that's what they did. They said, hey, we don't need to go by all these old scouting methods. We just need to get on base and get the runs we need. And it showed how the essence of sports is adapting to what's going on and then going from there and not staying tied into this one central thing. And I would say that Moneyball may seem a little soulless, but the point of sports are to win. And there's honor. There's no honor in losing greatly. There's honor in winning. And that's what it showed how to do, and that approach caught on.
All right. And Tyler, your minute begins for Field of Dreams now.
Well, I think you hit it on the head that Moneyball is quite simply soulless, and Field of Dreams is a classic baseball movie that isn't just about baseball. It's actually a drama fantasy about recapturing something that you've lost when you were a child. In Kevin Costner's case, he lost the chance of playing ball with his dad. So by the end of the movie is really a father-son tale about trying to recapture some sort of relationship that you never really got to have. So I think just having that is so much better than just being a movie about baseball. Yes, Moneyball is a great movie about baseball, but Field of Dreams is so much more. And I think if you watch it as a kid, if you have any sort of inkling of playing catch with your dad, when Kevin Costner's playing catch with his dad at the end, even though if it's too late, didn't matter.
All right. Would you like a 30-second rebuttal from Elliot? Go.
Can't wait to hear this.
Okay. I'll give you that it's soulless in terms of it doesn't go for the saccharine scrubs, blah, 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 blah shit that Field of Dreams does. But what it shows you is how the little guy can compete with the big guy, and that's all about sports is about. You got the Yankees spending millions and millions of dollars per season to compete. Well, you got the A's over here saying, look, we'll get who can get on base, and fuck you, we're going to win. Sports is about winning. It's not about reuniting with your damn father and a bunch of old, horrible Yankees.
Well, Elliot has gone for the jugular. Okay, so Ryan, based on those two arguments, what do you think, man?
You know, despite the strong rebuttal, I got to go with Field of Dreams.
Yeah, I get that.
Elliot, your rebuttal was so awesome. It's like, fuck your dad.
Yeah, that's basically what I was. Yeah, fuck Kevin Costner. Fuck his dad. And fuck James Earl Jones. Oh. I'm going to burn that field down.
By the way, I love Moneyball. And so it really hit me hard to call it soulless. But yeah.
I think it is soulless to a certain degree, but it's just... I do not like Field of Dreams.
Well, fair enough. I can tell.
Don't worry. We plowed right through that category, and now we're moving on to football. And you guys, the biggest surprise in the fan voting section of this tournament was in this particular matchup, and that is the fact that the Waterboy somehow got more votes than Brian's song.
Yeah.
So... Akron has beat Duke in the first round. Wow, so
it's one of those things. I mean, now that Brian's song has been eliminated, it's a great movie, and the scene where just the line that I love Brian Piccolo, like I can understand how that brings men to tears, but it was a made for TV movie in the 70s, and when you watch it today, it just kind of feels like it.
When you hit your knees tonight, I want you to pray to God for forgiveness for what you just said. Anyway, so I'll be taking the Waterboy. Which is like a number... Actually, it's a higher seed, I believe, than Any Given Sunday. How did this happen?
Bobby Boucher.
Anyway, yeah. So that means you... Or wait, that means you go first, because you have the lower seed with Any Given Sunday. Yeah. All right, JC, your minute begins now.
So Any Given Sunday, directed by Oliver Stone, is a film that I think a lot of football fans will love. It's a film that the NFL was so afraid of because they felt it was a little too realistic. They didn't allow them to use any real logos or anything like that. They, no participation from the NFL at all. But there is participation from NFL stars. Guys like Lawrence Taylor and Jim Brown played some amazing roles in this. Any Given Sunday is also an example of casting done right. The character of Willie Beeman could have easily been played by Chris Tucker or P. Diddy, and that would have just been awful. Of all the things that are great about Any Given Sunday, we cannot forget the speech that Al Pacino gives, the Inches speech. Highly regarded as one of, if not the best motivational speeches in all of sports movies.
All right. And my minute for The Waterboy starts
good luck.
Now. So I'm going to breeze over the fact that this was, at the time, the highest grossing sports comedy of all time. I'm going to breeze over the fact that it was the highest grossing Adam Sandler comedy of all time, which, say what you want about that guy's movies, they make bank. So for this one to be the highest grossing, lots of people saw this movie. No, I'm going to, and even the cast, even Henry Winkler, even Kathy Bates, even all these people that you know and you recognize, I'm going to breeze right over all of that and focus in on something you said, JC, which is Lawrence Taylor appears in Any Given Sunday. Lawrence Taylor also appears in The Waterboy, and frankly, I think has the better cameo in this film, because in this film, he is actually making fun of himself. He has that, like, giant lightning bolt earring. He's talking to the kids, and then he turns to the kids, and he's like, that reminds me of something, kids. Don't do crack. And it's just such a great send-up of his own sort of persona that the only thing they could have done better is to have him dive across the room and snap the femur of Bobby Boucher. So that is my argument for The Waterboy.
Okay.
I got nothing.
Ryan, what do you think, man?
I gotta go Waterboy.
Yes! Waterboy.
Can I? What? I don't really know what to say, really.
Yeah.
Three minutes of the biggest battle of professional lives.
His argument, his task is to pick the better argument, not the better movie, and he has done that.
That's the only time, the entire time we've done this, where I've just been like, fucking really?
Yeah. I don't get that, honestly.
I freely admit, I'm not good at this whole debate.
God damn.
Hey, we do not second guess the referee or we get ejected. We have talked about this, well, JC. I'm tired of your bad boy antics.
To be fair, I mean, Brian did go, he took it inch by inch.
I did take it.
And that made the fucking difference between winning and losing.
Inch by inch. All right, so...
To be fair, neither movie is particularly great.
How dare you?
Really?
Hey, I mean, you're right, but how dare you?
One has random schlong everywhere.
That's true.
I mean, that's the better one.
All right, so the second half of this football division, or what I used to call, like, the lower left-hand division, is Remember the Titans, Elliot, versus Rudy, Tyler. And since Rudy is the higher-seeded film, obviously, Remember the Titans is going to go first. Elliot, are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, Elliot, your minute begins now.
You know, the best thing about sports and the best is that it shows us who we could be at our best and our best person. And there's nothing better than coming together when you don't want to come together. And that's what Remember the Titans shows. It shows two teams coming together when they have no reason to want to come together because it's back in the 60s when everything was segregated. And the black players, they just want a place on the team. And the white players are like, well, you're going to kick me off the team. And they don't really shy away from the racial aspect of it. So you got that aspect. Then you have a symbolism aspect of Coach Yotes with I forgot his name, but he's in a bunch of Michael Bay movies, and Denzel Washington, Coach Boone, having to come together and say, we don't like each other, but how are we going to work together? And at its essence, that's what sports is about. Coming together, working together, figuring out the best plan, and going from there. And then on top of that, just the cinematography in the film shows football as the violent, punch-in-your-mouth sport it is. There are some hits in there. You're just like, I'm like, oh, my God, I don't know how I even did that.
All right. And Tyler, your minute begins for Rudy now.
Rudy is the ultimate comeback movie. I don't think there's another movie that I can think of right now, except for maybe Rocky, that even comes close to being some sort of underdog achieving everything that he ever wanted. And throughout Rudy, he is constantly tasked with all of these obstacles only to achieve not very much at the beginning. And it's sad. It's a very heartbreaking movie for most of the running time. But And then you get to the end where all the football players stand up, and it's about team camaraderie and coming together, and Rudy steps on the field, makes that sack, and you hear Rudy, 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 and then he gets carried off the field. Nobody in Notre Dame history has ever been carried off the field, and that movie shows it. That's the only time you'll ever see that story, and it's the only time that the underdog will ever be as victorious as that.
All right.
I got one.
All right, 30-second rebuttal for Elliot. Go for it.
I'm not going to take anything away from Rudy. I will breeze over that it has the characteristic magical Negro in it. But the fact that it's easy, like, I'm sorry, supporting a teammate that's having a hard time, okay. But come together after centuries of racial strife to cheer for people that you don't even like if you see them across from the street. You wouldn't spit on them if they put out a fire. You call 40-year-old man boy, but you'll cheer for him. I mean, that's more about coming together than Rudy is.
Do I get a rebuttal?
Yeah, go for
okay.
it.
Okay. Whenever Remember the Titans is on, I consider it a sometimer. Sure, I'll watch it if it happens to be on, but if Rudy's on, that's an all-timer. I watch that every single time it's on, every single minute. Remember the Titans is a great movie, fantastic themes, but fantastic themes doesn't make up for Disney production. It's very, very light. It doesn't challenge the viewer at all. There's really not much emotional stakes in it other than the fact the stuff that's already pushed on you from the beginning.
You're about to make this personal.
You just called it fluffy. All right. So, Ryan, tell us what you're thinking, man.
Yeah, I mean, you hit all the main spots there with that. You know, you took me back to watching Rudy, and it gave me chills. And I think that's, you know, when I watched it, it gave me chills. Your speech didn't necessarily take me to chills, but it reminded me of the feeling, and so I gotta go with Rudy.
All right.
Hey, that's my job, is just to remind people. So
just
yeah, that's a great point too. It's like that, if that movie's on, I'm probably, there's however much time is left in the movie, I'm probably gonna sit there and watch it.
And there you have it. Well, moving over into the top right-hand division, or I guess – no, there's actually a name for it this time, the basketball division. We have Coach Carter going up against Teen Wolf, Coach Carter being JC, and Teen Wolf somehow ranked number 5 in the basketball movies.
Yeah, I should point out that, Ash and Fern, and thank you to them, they helped rank the movies. And it was before I kind of came up with the system of averaging out the IMDb and Rotten Tomato critics and audience scores. So – whatever system they used, it was kind of an odd one because Hoop Dreams, the Criterion film, was like the 11th seed.
Hey, we're not going to argue with them, but, because they did it so we didn't have to. So,
yeah, and I mean, it made for some interesting matchups, and just kind of, we talked about the first and second round, just kind of some highlights. Just like in the actual NCAA tournament, there was a 12-5 upset in any given Sunday.
Took out, what did it be?
Any Given Sunday took out Friday Night Lights.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
So those kids just can't win at all,
whoa,
can they?
Yeah. Ooh, really resisting the urge to insult the
fans. Hey, yeah. Don't do that. All right, so who's got the higher seed? I do. So, JC, yeah, you're going first with Coach Carter, and your minute begins now.
So Coach Carter is based on a true story. A true story that really revolves around the importance of the student athlete, which is something that we've gone away from in, you know, today's society, especially in the NCAA. Starring Sam Jackson as the coach. This was made in 2005, right around, I think Sam Jackson had a few roles where he was the main guy, but this is, you know, kind of one of the few films in which I think he's not one of many people, but he is the main guy. If you love Samuel Jackson monologues, he delivers plenty of them here, especially about women when he names different plays on his basketball team after women and their tendencies. Plus, this film is one of the early roles of C. Tate's Charming Potato. That's Channing Tatum. He's in this movie, and he's not in a small role. He's in this movie a lot, and he even raps, which is kind of amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got so distracted by the C tapes that that was amazing.
He'll do that.
Yeah. Isn't
to be
it
fair,
bad that every time I think of Charming Potato, I think about his role in This Is the End.
Yeah, no, he's great in that.
It's like, come on, dude.
All right, so you've made your case for Coach Carter. Now I have to somehow push for Teen Wolf. Okay, here we go. All right, so one of the things we talk about a lot with these sports tournaments is the power of sports, and especially what we've been talking about lately is the power of sports to facilitate acceptance. and we've talked about how that's, you know, along racial lines, along, you know, like New Kid in the Neighborhood. You know, sports are a great way to bring people together and help put aside differences. And at no point in cinematic sports history has that been more apparent than the time basketball actually helped high school kids accept a werewolf. You tell me. At how, like, in the canon of Universal Monsters, all they've ever done is, there's a monster, let's kill it, pitchforks and torches. But if they had had basketball in Bavaria, then maybe, just maybe, Frankenstein's monster would not have been a pariah, but in fact, an all-star, someone who is revered by everyone. Basketball really is the great equalizer, so much that it can make the most monstrous among us accepted and embraced, and that is my argument for Teen Wolf.
This is a slow clap.
The fact that you even were able to do that's pretty amazing.
Jesus Christ, dude.
All right, Ryan, what's your...
Only because I don't know how this judge votes, I need a rebuttal.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right, so JC's going to do a quick 30-second rebuttal and go for it.
So, as a sports movie, I think Teen Wolf is not a very good sports movie. It's a great movie that addresses everything Brian just said. But if you look closely at all of the basketball scenes, it's pretty much the same shot over and over again from different angles. This is a terribly shot basketball movie, one of the most terribly shot basketball movies you can ever see.
All right, Ryan, what are you thinking, man?
I think, you know, it's Channing Tatum rapping versus a all-star werewolf. I got to go with the all-star werewolf.
Oh! Yes!
I'm not shenanigans.
Yes! Oh! I think that's an upset. I would consider that an upset.
Even though Teen Wolf is ranked higher, yeah,
I'd still consider it an upset. Because trying to argue that Teen Wolf is an actually good movie is pretty hard.
I gotta give it to you. That was some quality bullshit.
Yeah, there's nothing I can't argue.
I could have, and maybe I should have gone with the fact that Film School Rejects uses the Teen Wolf scale as their rating.
Well, save it. You may have to come up against it again, man. Don't be throwing that out now. Yeah. All right, so to close out the basketball division is Space Jam versus White Men Can't Jump. This is awesome. Elliot, you've got Space Jam, which is ranked, again, somehow, number 3, versus White Man Can't Jump at number 2, which means you will be going first. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, Elliot, go for it.
Okay, Space Jam. Well, I think Space Jam is a great animated movie from the mid-90s, and the thing about Space Jam is it really does exemplify, you know, sports in that you got a team that goes in and says, we can't beat them, so what do? Let's get a ringer. Because that's what you do in sports. If you're playing baseball, you're playing basketball, you get a star. You can put together the best Pacers team you ever want to put together, but they're going to get beat by LeBron when it comes time for the playoffs. You got to have the best star you can. So you can steal all the talent from Charles Barkley and Larry Johnson and Patrick Ewing, but you know when it comes down to it, Jordan is still going to whip your ass. They also have a great, great cameo by Bill Murray. Being really funny, and you know, the thing about Bill Murray, a lot of people don't realize is that sometimes he can be really missed, but he was hit that time. You also have some really great little spots that the animators put in, like little nods to Pulp Fiction in there that comes out of nowhere. And if any child was like, "Wait a second, is Bugs Bunny gonna get raped in the back of a store?"
Because that's what kids think.
All right.
I think I zoned out there. What happened?
No, that's fine. Okay, Tyler, argue for White Men Can't Jump. Your minute starts now.
Space Jam is quite simply a commercial of a movie. It has no actual narrative, really. I mean, like, yes, he's trying to get all these players together and play with them on a team, but it's fucking Michael Jordan. I mean, Michael Jordan can't act. Do you know what the guys in White Man Can't Jump do when they figured out they couldn't play basketball? They learned how to play basketball. And those guys actually played basketball. Not just that, those scenes, you can tell that they're actually playing basketball. Because those Wesley Snipes can dunk. Woody Harrelson, probably not. That was probably fake. But it's pretty awesome that they even tried to convince you that these can do that. Honestly, Space Jam has the I Believe I Can Fly song, all right? I believe the motherfuckers can dunk. And that's what White Man can do. They can jump and they can dunk.
Do their tax.
And those guys are awesome.
Wow. Okay. Are you going to do a rebuttal, Elliot?
Yeah.
All right. And go.
Okay. I was not going after you. You got to come after me. I'm going after the movie. I'm
going
to have to bring it to your door. Okay. You talk about can't play basketball. Michael Jordan is the seminal star of our age in basketball. He was so good that they gave him a movie, and it made a shit ton of money. If you want to talk about a dunk, let's talk about a motherfucking half-court dunk. When people are dragging his ass down, you know what? That seems silly, But it's Michael Jordan. You know what? I bet you he could in his prime. He could have probably dunked from the free throw line. People were dragging on him.
Okay, are you going to rebut? Yeah, okay, go for it, Jesus Christ!
It didn't just seem silly; it was silly. That movie is silly as shit. And honestly, Michael, they gave him the movie because he's Michael Jordan. Those two guys, Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes, earned every cent that came from that fucking movie because it was an actual movie. There was a dramatic role to it. In the immortal words of Roger Ebert, it's not just a movie about basketball.
All right, Ryan, you've heard two maybe overly enthusiastic, overly passionate arguments.
Do you guys want to hug or something?
I don't want to hug at three times.
I don't want to hug him.
We're friends.
It's all in fun, Elliot. All right, so what do you think, Ryan?
I can't believe it, but Space Jam wins.
Every time I cut and paste a movie into the next one. I picked the wrong one.
Man, this is incredible. Down goes Frazier. Holy shit. Okay. Wow. Okay, so moving on to the miscellaneous sports division, which is sort of the, if you can think of it as the and the rest from Gilligan's Island. The first movie in this bracket is Caddyshack, which is a number one seed, which is Elliot's movie, versus the number four seed Slapshot. So I guess that means that I am going first. And I will start my time now. Okay, so Slapshot hockey movies don't get enough respect. I mean, when most people talk about hockey movies, they talk about a bunch of little kids playing a team from Iceland who is not even double their size. I mean, not a lot of odds there, but hockey movies don't get the respect that they deserve. And Slapshot is the movie that's out to take that respect by the balls and slam it into the ice and punch it into submission. Slapshot is a movie where we got Paul Newman. Paul Newman, one of the greatest actors Earth has ever known, who is leading this complete band of miscreants. I mean, if you have seen Mighty Ducks as a kid, if you liked that movie, you need to kiss the feet of George Roy Hill, who directed Slapshot, because all Mighty Ducks is a combination of Slapshot and Bad News Bears. That's it. And Slapshot, on the other hand, has the absolutely amazing Hansen brothers. You want to talk about guys that know how to back up their teammates? I would not want to cross paths with the Hansen brothers, any one of them or all of them looking like the Ramones on steroids. All right, so, sorry, got a little heated there. And, Elliot, it is your minute for Caddyshack, and go.
I think one of the best things about sports, outside of all the appeals to sentimentality, is being able to say, God, you remember when Jordan hit that jumper in 96 to take out the Utah Jazz, or when Jordan hit that shot against the Cavaliers and Elo was on the ground crying? Well, when you talk about memorable moments, the equivalent to movies in a sports movie is quotable moments. It means about quotes. You got Carl Spechler. It's like, so I jump on my ship in Hong Kong and I make my walk over to the bed and I get on a looper ship. Of course, it's in the Himalayas. A looper, you know, a caddy, a looper, a jock. So I tell him I'm a pro jock, and what do you think they give me? The Dalai Lama himself. 12th stump of the Lama. The flowing robes, the grace, bald, striking. So I'm on the first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls up and whacks one. Big hitter. The llama long into a 10,000-foot crevasse right at the base of the glacier. Do you know what the llama says? Gunga, 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 gunga. So we finish the 18th, and he's going to stiff me. And I say, hey, llama, how about a little something, you know, for the effort, you know? And he says, there won't be any money, but when you die, on your death belt, you'll receive total consciousness. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
All right, I'm going to take just a couple second rebuttal and just point out that I didn't read from the fucking script. The end.
Rebuttal?
Sure.
Well, I got my telephone, so that's going me for that. So that's nice.
All right. There you go, Ryan. It's up to you, man.
I mean, do I really have to judge it on the quality of the argument?
Yes, that is entirely the point. He doesn't want to. He's like,
I can't. It's hard for me to do it.
I think Slapshot's gonna take this one. I just wanted to read that.
Slapshot wins.
Slapshot is. No, that's absolutely what you have to do when Elliot does something like read from the script on his phone.
Yeah, I pulled a JC.
Yay, man. It's a Hail Mary for sure. But all right. So
how could you not adequately defend Caddyshack?
I like that quote too much, honestly.
That's fine. It happens.
No, I've noticed I tend to lose the ones I really like, and I win the ones I don't give a shit about.
Don't stress it, man. So the final one for this first round is Rush versus Warrior. Rush number 6, Warrior number 7. Rush, JC, that is you. You are the higher seeded. So, Tyler, you are going to defend Warrior for 1 minute, and your minute starts now.
Warrior is everything a modern kind of fight movie needs to be. I think that it takes the best aspects of kind of classic 70s cinema and classic 70s sports movies and brings them into the modern world with MMA in a way that everybody can relate to it because, you know, it's a tale of yes, MMA fighters, and yes, the fight scenes are amazing and they're well choreographed and everything is well directed, but really it's the performances that made this movie just outstanding. Tom Hardy and Edgerton, or what's his, I forget his name.
Joel
Edgerton, yeah. They're just phenomenal as the brothers just, kind of distanced away from each other, and Nick Nolte as their alcoholic father is just amazing. And honestly, it's heartbreaking. And by the end, you know, you don't want to have to root for anybody. But by the end of it, you're in tears, just of joy of watching these two guys come together.
All right, and JC, your minute for Rush begins now.
So Rush is the based on a true story, based on the true rivalry of James Hunt and Niki Lauda, F1 racers. Played respectively by Chris Hemsworth and Daniel Brühl. Daniel Brühl was amazing in this. He received multiple award nominations. The great thing about Rush, unlike any other sports movie I've seen, is it takes you into the mind of two rivals better than anything that's ever been done. You understand kind of what drives James Hunt, and which, you know, is what drives a lot of people, money, girls, things like that. What drives Niki Lauda is just the thrill of the competition. You know, and he doesn't care about being liked. All he cares about is winning. Two completely polar opposites, yet there's nothing villainous about Niki Lauda, and there's nothing too egotistical about James Hunt. Damn it, I ran out of time.
I'll do a quick rebuttal.
Do it.
You know, you talk about rivalries, and I don't think there's anything better about Warrior than the fact that two brothers are rivals, and you can't really beat the fact that there's armbar submissions at the end, and you can feel every ounce of pain and anguish, not just physical pain, but emotional pain that the characters are going through, and when that last note hits, and you know, everybody walks out of the ring, it's just tears, man.
Yeah, this is, you know, just kind of the way Warrior ends in that it seems like a brotherhood was kind of, you know, rekindled. While it seems like, you know, James Hunt and Niki Lauda were really intense rivals, by the end of the movie you learn that they had, you know, the respect for each other, and so much respect for each other that they consider themselves rivals, but they never truly considered themselves enemy, which is different from the experience you get when you watch Warrior.
All right, Ryan, it's up to you, sir.
You know, it's tough. It's tough to compare rivals when it's two brothers, so I got to go with Warrior.
Yeah. All right.
That's the only one. That was heartbreaking for me because I yeah. love Warriors
yeah.
so
and I haven't
much.
Seen Rush, so that's why yeah. I didn't mention anything.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, any of our listeners who hasn't seen one or both of them, you need to go out and watch those right now.
Definitely.
Round two, fight!
Well, we're now in the second round, which means two things. We have whittled it down to 8, and no more rebuttals. Rebuttals are done as of the end of the first round, so you got to make your case.
I like those, and I cannot lie.
That's too bad. I like rebuttals, and I cannot lie. But starting us off in the second round is going to be The Sandlot versus Field of Dreams. Is that correct? So one versus a two.
Shit.
Yeah.
Two powerhouses.
Oof. All right, well.
This is Ali... Foreman right here.
This is Ali Foreman for sure. All right, well, Tyler, yours is technically seated lower, so you go first. Are you ready?
Yeah, give me just 1 second. Okay.
All right, and go.
There's a moment in Field of Dreams that I think encapsulates the whole movie, and it's that moment where James Earl Jones is sitting in the stands, and Kevin Costner's family is just around him, and he's convinced throughout the whole movie. Kevin Costner is convinced that there's something out in the field that's calling him, that's making him do this for whatever reason, and he never knows exactly what the reason is, and up until the very end. And I think it's the moment where his father walks through the field, and he sees him across the other side of the field. And Kevin Costner, at that moment, understands exactly why he did this, why he was meant to do all of this. And I think the movie is so great in that it bends the kind of reality and fantasy that you would normally get in a sports drama. The reality is there, but the fantasy is very, very important to the overall story and characters.
All right. Well, my minutes for Sandlot begins now. You wouldn't think of it, but there are actually a lot of similarities between the Sandlot and Field of Dreams, one of which being the father-son relationship is a lot more kind of difficult in the Sandlot, because it's, you know, this young boy, Scotty Smalls, who is learning to deal with the fact that Dennis Leary is his stepfather, which is pretty much the scariest prospect I could imagine in my entire life. And not only that, James Earl Jones is also in the Sandlot, and his character in the Sandlot, I mean, you want to talk about the two characters in terms of their love of the game and what they bring to the role, being sort of their dedication to baseball. In Field of Dreams, he's a reporter. He's a guy that's written about baseball his whole life. In the Sandlot, he's a guy that played baseball and loved the game so much that he actually lost his vision playing it. So, I mean, if we really just compare the two movies and talk about what they have in common, the James Earl Jones connection is actually a lot stronger in the Sandlot than it is in Field of Dreams. All right, and since we're out of rebuttals, it's now up to you, Ryan.
Yeah, I think did a great job painting the picture for Field of Dreams, and that takes it.
Oh, all right.
There you go.
Well done, Tyler.
I'm actually kind of disappointed with that because I love the Sandlot so much.
It's a hell of a thing. All right. Well,
you're killing me, Smalls.
You're killing me, Smalls. All right. That moves us on to where are we, JC?
Waterboy versus Rudy.
Oh God.
two movies that could be more similar.
You can do it.
Here's what sucks is I haven't seen Rudy in a long time, so I'm running low on gas here.
Don't worry. I have the Waterboy. I think you're going to be okay.
Well, don't worry about that, Mr. Frodo. If you can't carry him, I can carry you.
All right. Well, I'll go ahead and start for the Waterboy. My minute.
Is that lower or higher than mine?
Shut the fuck up. All right. Here we go. All right, so The Waterboy is a film about, again, we talk about how the different sports are equalizers and how they're able to embrace all kinds of different people. Bobby Boucher is a total outcast. I mean, he is somebody that nobody really wants to give the time of day to, until you find out, oh, wait a minute, he can take that passion and that anger inside of him and actually do something with it and actually make a contribution. And it's, you know, it's funny because you think it's just a convention, it's a setup, but really it's asking some difficult questions about society. Should we only accept people once they've demonstrated an ability on the football field? I mean, Bobby Boucher is basically mentally ill, and the only time anyone really gives him any props is when he's playing professional sports. And I think that's an indictment of our current society and how exactly we treat the mentally ill. And that is my argument for The Waterboy. Tyler.
Yeah, you are.
Oh, my God.
Tyler, it rests on your shoulders now. Go.
Okay, so Waterboy, yes, you know, in a very weird way, I can understand every single thing you were saying, and I could kind of see it in The Waterboy. The big difference is that The Waterboy has Adam Sandler, and he has no actual emotional depth in the movie whatsoever. So yes, he brings an actual physical presence to his team, and he helps them, you know, he actually helps them with tackles and things like that. But what Rudy does is he brings an emotional presence to the team. He brings something that actually brings the team together and allows them to play better. And I think that overall, Rudy has a lot more of an issue. Like, he has more issues to overcome than Bobby Boucher does. Bobby Boucher, yeah, he talks funny. He may live out in the swamp, but Rudy is dyslexic. He's not particularly big. He has a hard time in school, and he overcomes all of those obstacles to do the one thing he's always wanted to do, and that's to play Notre Dame football.
All right, so Ryan, since we don't have any rebuttals this round, what do you think?
I think it's, you know, the mentally ill versus the emotional underdog. The emotional underdog wins it.
I would be very dubious of your qualifications to be referee if you said anything different. So, well done. You made the right choice for sure. Although I want to just, I'm sorry. I pulled that argument completely out of my ass, and
it's not a terrible argument.
I thought I was listening to myself there. Just like, Jesus Christ!
I have learned to bullshit from Elliot the lawyer. So
all
I
had to think of was, wait a minute, Adam Sandler's in that movie. That's all I had to do.
The smoking gun.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say something like, "Oh, the water boy influenced Rudy." I thought you were going to pull that.
No way.
Yeah, that's something you did. Okay, so the last of this second round is Slapshot versus Warrior.
Oh, wow.
Well, no, there's the basketball.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. No, you're right. My bad. I skipped over basketball entirely. Silly me. So that would be Teen Wolf versus Space Jam.
Oh, my God.
This is going to be fun. I am really excited for this. Since I technically have the lower seed, I guess that I will... Okay, I guess I'll go first, and I will start off my minute right now. Okay, I want to talk about success and failure when we talk about these two films, and both of these films owe their existence to other films, other lineages of directors. In the case of Teen Wolf, I mean, you're talking about the Universal Monsters, you're talking about, you know, Wolfman with Lon Chaney Jr., great film, but then as the years went on, so many more werewolf movies, so many Wolfman movies, Abbott and Costello got in the mix. The genre was kind of dead, so they found an interesting way to bring that into the 80s and really make it a little bit resurgent and introduce a new audience to Universal Monster movies. Space Jam, on the other hand, owes its entire existence to Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai. It could not be more of a ripoff of that movie if it tried. You have this, basically the Looney Tunes are the beleaguered farm village that the Monstars come in and they're like, we're going to come back and take everything you have. So what do? They go out and recruit not seven, but a practically 7 foot tall basketball star to come in and fight their battles for them. And unfortunately, it's a terrible remake of Seven Samurai, whereas, yeah, Teen Wolf, Wolfman, you got it. You got the whole thing. All right, Elliot. Your minute begins now.
You know, looking at Space Jam and looking at the subject matter of Looney Tunes playing with Michael Jordan, it's really easy to dismiss it. But you know what? I was thinking a little bit about the plot, and when it was released, it actually follows Michael Jordan's return to the NBA from 90 after he retired the first time, and him coming back after his father died, and finding out that competitive fire in him is not gone. And that's the core of Space Jam, is saying the core of why people compete and why people even want to do sports is that they have a fire in them that they just want to win. And that's what Space Jam at its core is about. It says, I can't stand that my punishment for eternity be getting beaten basketball, and I want to win for that. Or, you know what? It's time for me to come back to the NBA, and it actually has a very good center there. So I'd say that when you talk about sports, the root of all sports is that competitive spirit and the will to win. And Space Jam has that in spades, and is a better sports movie.
All right, Ryan, what are you thinking, sir?
I love Teen Wolf.
All right, well, Teen Wolf, somehow, against all odds, is advancing to the final four.
Can I just say something? So, I don't consider myself a hipster of anything. I think I now consider myself a hipster of basketball movies. Because all the basketball movies that I love completely just didn't even make it out. One of the movies I want to talk about real quick is called Rebound, the story of Earl the Goat Manigault. Playground legend, guy who never got to play in the NBA, HBO movie played by Don Cheadle. The legend of Earl the Goat Manigault is that he was a guy who could jump so high, he could reach to the top of the backboard. If you left a dollar up there, he would jump up there, put four quarters, and come back down. He was able to do the legendary double dunk, where in one jump he could put a ball through the hoop twice. I recommend checking that out. Earl Manigault is easily the best player who never made it.
I am not saying that you're a basketball movie hipster. I am saying that your taste is like the Neutral Milk Hotel of basketball movie taste.
Hey, so, I like Neutral Milk Hotel.
No, that's fine. You can go on liking them. That's totally cool for you. So the last entry of this particular second round is, of course, Slapshot versus Warrior. And Tyler, your film is 7 seeded, whereas mine is 4, so you get to go first. And your minute begins now.
I think that the crux of Warrior is really the relationship between the two brothers as they go through this change through the movie, and it boils down to we see each character kind of in a sense transform themselves into things that they don't necessarily want to do for the sake of money, for the sake of happiness, which is you know, put forth as money. But as we get further into the movie, we realize, wait a minute, these guys are going to have to fight each other at some point, and it's not going to be good. And it's a hard decision for the audience to really make by the end, is do I root for the struggling family man, or do I root for the down-on-his-luck former soldier war hero? You know, like, where do I go? And I think that that's the ultimate drama that that movie brings, is it's true drama. It's the kind of drama that you go to the movies for.
That TNT knows.
Yeah, the TNT knows.
All right, my minute for Slapshot begins now. I'll agree with you. There is an epic amount of drama. There is high levels of drama in Warrior. But, I mean, when it comes right down to it, drama's great, but what we're really looking for in these movies is fun and that element of entertainment. I mean, it's sports are meant to entertain us. And on a certain level, we get inspired by them, but a lot of that is us assigning our own kind of feelings and our own life experiences to different athletes. Really, all we really want is that sport to be fun and for that sport to transport us for a little while and make us forget the mundanity of our life. And Slapshot isn't just a fun film. It is actually the movie that Paul Newman, who again is one of the greatest actors of our time, has openly admitted in several interviews was the most fun movie he ever did. I mean, you're talking about a guy that was in the Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid with Robert Redford, but that's not the movie he talks about as being the most fun. It's the one where, again, the insane Ramones that are the Hanson brothers, working with those guys, that's the most fun he ever had. I gotta give it to it. All right, so Ryan, what are you thinking, sir?
Well, I'm thinking, you know, despite, boy, that's tough. I was leaning toward the Warrior the whole time, and I think at the very end, you got me with Slapshot.
Yes!
Awesome.
You know what this means, though, is what? That we're facing each other, and we're facing our own movies in the second round.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing.
This tournament is going to be bananas.
Amazing.
Round three, fight!
Okay, so now we've entered round three, or the final four. JC, what movies are in the final four right now? Please explain.
Final four, Teen Wolf, Field of Dreams, Slapshot, and Rudy.
Wait, so who's facing who, though?
Wait a minute. Oh, it's Field, you're right. So Field of Dreams versus who won in the football division?
Rudy. So it's me versus me. And then it's you versus you and the other one.
All right, so here's how we can do this. We can either...
I'm down for arguing with myself.
You're down for arguing with yourself?
I can try it, yeah.
All right.
I can try it.
It's Slapshot versus Rudy.
Okay. Well, then that works good. All right. Okay, great.
This tournament is like a... It's like a bad Disney production movie because it's full of Cinderellas.
The bracket, the miscellaneous where Slapshot is in the lower right, and football is in the lower left. So how can they be... playing each other in the final four. It should be miscellaneous versus basketball.
You're totally right.
But can't we just do it that way?
I did my spreadsheet weird.
No, because it'll fuck up the whole tournament. Yeah, it's a whole bracket. Okay.
Yeah, sorry about that.
So I'm going to let Tyler argue with himself, yeah. And I'm going to argue with myself, and we will figure out who's in the final. It may end up being that we have to then argue with ourselves in the final. I know.
Then y'all just choose the one y'all want.
Well, no. It won't be, because one of mine is going to win, and one of yours is going to win.
Oh, that's
so true. Yeah. So it's definitely going to be me versus you at some point. Just... Right. If it's fucking Teen Wolf versus Broody, it's going to be nuts. Shit's going to lose. Oh,
okay. So Tyler has Field of Dreams, and Tyler has Broody. Here's the interesting part. Both of those are number two seeds.
So does that mean I have to say this shit at the same time?
No, it means you get to decide which one you want to argue first.
Let me do... God, this is tough, man. Let me do Broody.
Right.
Yeah.
So your minute for Broody begins now.
So, Rudy is really like the ultimate underdog movie. It's been known as the most underdog movie of all time, and I think that the crazy part about Rudy is that you kind of forget what the movie is actually about halfway through, because he's so intent on getting to Notre Dame and so intent on playing football that you forget that it's really a journey about a man just trying to achieve his dreams. And I think what's so great is, yes, football is a component of that, but I think it's more than that. He wanted to go to Notre Dame. Yes, he wanted to go to Notre Dame to play football, but he also wanted to succeed in his life, and he thought the best way to do that was to get to Notre Dame and to go there. I myself am a huge Notre Dame college football fan. So when I grew up, when I started playing football, I said I wanted to go to Notre Dame. That's exactly what I want to do. I want to go to Notre Dame and play football. I wasn't good enough, but Rudy made me believe that I could someday be good enough.
All right, so that was Rudy, and now Tyler.
Jesus Christ! Can I have 1 second?
No. Really quick? Yes, you can.
Just 1 second.
Talk about how much of an idiot that guy is.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I feel like I'm reading a what if comic book right now.
All
right,
let's do this.
All right, and go.
So you talk about Rudy as if, you know, there's this great character that you know, goes through the drama and goes through the trials and tribulations and things like that. But honestly, Kevin Costner goes through time. He goes through time to figure this shit out. He goes back to the 70s Boston to find this baseball player that struggled, and then he picks up a baseball player hitchhiking. And it's this blend of reality and fantasy that I think is something that you don't get anywhere else on the planet. I mean, you don't see a baseball movie that's like this. I mean, you get a baseball movie maybe like, you know, like Moneyball earlier, which is very, very cold, calculated. But this is a drama that, you know, transcends any sort of sport. So in that way, I guess they're very similar, Rudy and Field of Dreams. But the difference is that Field of Dreams has a little bit more oomph and curious change and yeah, fuck. God damn it.
Hey, the good news is you're going to win.
Yes, yeah. Either way.
Your nose is bleeding.
I like how you went after yourself.
Yeah, it's what you got to do. All right.
That's what I got to do.
Ryan, what do you think, sir?
Rudy.
I felt stronger about that one, too. So I'm glad.
Well, nighttime is the right time, so yes.
I got to say, Tyler, you kicked your ass. It was amazing to watch.
You can play with yourself anytime, can't you?
So Rudy makes it to the finals, which is the ironic thing. No, I'll get into that later. You know what? I'm going to save that in case I have to argue against it.
Steak Plissken.
Are we going to do that? Is it going to be me versus Steak?
Beat the shit out of Salisbury. Steak Plissken.
All right. Well, Steak Plissken is going to take Slapshot.
That's a good idea.
And Brian is going to take Teen Wolf. So
it will be his song.
Yeah. See, Slapshot's the higher seeded, so Teen Wolf gets to go first. And I'm going to go ahead. Oh boy, how much more can I say about Teen Wolf? Let's find out. So Teen Wolf is, you know, we talk about, you know, a lot of these movies, whether they're seminal sports movies, whether they adequately represent the sport, you know, that they feature. The thing we haven't touched on in any of these movies is how adequately these films represent the eras in which they were made. And none of the films on this list in any way, shape, or form better exemplify the decade in which they were made, as does Teen Wolf. And if it weren't for Teen Wolf, we wouldn't have Jason Bateman, who starred in the unfortunate sequel, Teen Wolf 2. I mean, the legacy of this film, I mean, not only does it, you know, give us Jason Bateman, not only does it represent the 80s, but it also gave us one of the greatest movie rumors since The Hanging Girl in the Back of The Wizard of Oz. You remember the extra? They said Everett was exposing himself in the stands. Turns out, that extra was a woman, but I love the fact that even in the internet age, this movie continues to give. It creates a meme and a mystery for the online community to argue about, even though it's a movie about a kid who's a werewolf who plays basketball. That is the greatness of Teen Wolf. Okay. And now I'm adopting my alter ego, Steak Plissken, to argue for Slapshot. Michael J. Fox is a pussy. And I don't mean to talk about him now when he's got the shakes. I don't mean to insult the guy. But at the time, Marty McFly, more like punch him in the dick. That guy is nothing. And I can prove that. What did they do with Teen Wolf? You talk about the legacy of Teen Wolf. It's an MTV show that rips off Twilight now. That's your legacy. That's your precious legacy. Meanwhile, the Hanson brothers, they don't give a fuck about Michael J. Fox. They are there to fight, to be the essence of manhood, to be the pillars of chauvinist sports smash mouth. It is everything that is great about hockey boiled down to three sets of fists. I don't even know why this is an argument. Paul Newman versus Michael J. Fox? At least Paul Newman had the good sense to die before he made a terrible sitcom with the chick from Breaking Bad. Good God. All right, well, I guess somebody's going to have to win that battle. And, Ryan, I don't envy your choice here. But what do you think?
That was some great, great points, Nick. But, you know, it has to go. It has to go to Teen Wolf.
Does it have to?
No, it does, because that means...
Final round, fight!
It's the final countdown!
Here we are.
Rudy and Teen Wolf.
Here we are in the final round. The showdown of showdowns versus Rudy and Teen Wolf.
Gotta say, I was not expecting that.
That is why I love these tournaments. That is why I love the fact that we have referees. And that is why I love the fact that we base it entirely upon the arguments and not the films themselves. Because you can have situations where Teen Wolf makes it... Ellie, you can't shake your head because you took Harold and Kumar 3D to the finals of the Christmas movie tournament.
Who ended up winning that Christmas movie tournament?
Not Harold and Kumar 3D, but it was Scrooged by like a nose, though, so... All right.
Put an asterisk by this one.
To be fair, Elliot puts an asterisk by everything that he doesn't win, which I right. respect. I respect that. All right, so Teen Wolf is 5, Rudy is 2, so I guess that means I get to go first again. Okay, and let me go ahead and give myself...
Should have used a voice for Teen Wolf.
I should have, right? All right, here we go. All right, so... Tyler is probably going to once again hit upon the one argument that anybody can make for Rudy, and that argument is underdog, underdog, underdog. I will submit to you that in this particular competition, the real underdog is Teen Wolf. You want to talk about a movie that actually exemplifies everything that Rudy is all about? Teen Wolf got to the finals of a 64. I want to repeat this. There were 64 movies originally, whittled down to 16, and then we've been arguing to these two, and Teen Wolf stood head and tails, literally, above the rest. A true underdog story, a better underdog... You know, I gotta go Howard Cosell for this. A truer underdog story than never was told. This is the essence of rising above the challenge and getting to where you were not supposed to be and succeeding despite your shortcomings. Talk about Rudy all you want. Notre Dame, fine. I'm an Indiana boy too, but I'm sorry. The real underdog striving for greatness here is Teen Wolf.
You got the touch. You got the power.
Oh, man. If this had been the Transformers movie versus Teen Wolf, shit would be off the charts.
All right, Tyler.
I think Mike Esposito would just come in here by himself.
And kick us all in the junk. All right, here we go. Your minute starts now.
Okay, so when it boils down to it, would you rather watch Sean Astin as a down-on-his-luck football player, you know, trying his best, doing everything he can possibly do to get just some semblance of success, which by his terms is stepping on the field? Or would you rather see Michael J. Fox in piss-poor makeup doing somersaults end over end all game long off of clearly trampolines and lowered goalposts? Or would you rather watch Sean Astin work his ass off, become the best he can possibly be, achieve every dream that he's ever had? And that's all I got.
All right, with your last 13 seconds, I will just say that I think you answered your own question. So, all right, here it is. The final verdict. The decision. And I'm not talking about people moving to South Beach and getting a tan. I'm talking about the important decision. Mr. McCann, which film wins the sports movie tournament?
I'm going to preface it by saying if you were pitching me a movie as Michael J. Fox in shitty werewolf makeup doing somersaults on a basketball court versus Sean Astin as a down on his luck trying to make it on the Notre Dame football team, I would have to go with Michael J. Fox. But for this, I'm going to go with that.
So Teen Wolf just won.
Teen Wolf wins the sports movie tournament. And we have lost all credibility as a sports show. And I love it. I love every second of it. This is incredible. Rain down the ticker tape parade. Teen Wolf.
I mean, Rudy is so, it's so good. That is like the pinnacle of sports movies. But just the imagery again of Michael J. Fox in shitty makeup.
I won you the fucking game.
All game.
It's a terribly shot basketball movie.
Shenanigans.
Too bad. Go cry into your non-trophies, losers. This is exactly why I love these tournaments. It's because they are harder to predict than the actual NCAA tournament. I love it. Ryan, sir, thank you so much for being on and being our referee, man. We really, really appreciate that.
That was a lot of fun. I mean, I hope I didn't disappoint you guys. But, you know, it was really you guys that disappointed me.
All of the blame forever has always rested upon our shoulders, so don't worry about that one bit.
I gotta give him that.
Yeah. And we'll be looking forward to the article that's going to publish. This is going to go up on Friday. On Monday, guys, definitely look for Ryan's article up on the site. And also, we're going to have a link there to the Kickstarter because we need to see a MacLister movie, like, right the hell now. So we are 100% behind that, and just want to thank you again for coming on. You were the first actual athlete that we've had on this show, so congratulations on being the first.
Nice. Well, it was an honor. It was a lot of fun, and yeah, I'm pumped to show this video to you guys on Monday. I think you're gonna love it.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us, guys, and that's going to do it for Inside the Locker. I want to remind you yet again, you can find us on Twitter. You can find the show at ITLcast, or you can find us individually. I am at Bryguy Salisbury.
At JCDeLeon1.
At ITL Elliot.
At Tyler Major, MAGER.
And of course, becoming a subscriber, I'm just going to say this one more time, would be a really smart thing to do right now. Our incentive package that we're putting together that we have all but finalized. We just had to cross some T's and dot some I's so we don't promise anything we can't deliver. But, man, the stuff that we have put together that we are definitely going to deliver is fantastic. So there's actually, starting this week, there are going to be little buttons at the bottom of every post where you can just easily become a subscriber. You can easily check out a lot of different things, just making it a little bit more functional. And so enjoy that as well.
And I just want to say, I'm on a podcast, and I was on the movie reviews, but I've been a subscriber since y'all started. I feel like I've gotten more than the value of what I've been putting in.
Well,
like,
thanks, man.
I mean, I only donate, I think, $10 a month, but that is – I get so much – I listen to Digital Noise. I listen to The Original Gentleman. I listen to – it's hard.
Which, by the way, now is biweekly.
I hope, because I love that show, and I'm not trying to say anything. I just love the show.
That's what I've been told. More. That's what I've been told, because is that it will be biweekly now.
There's some times I feel like Phil Coulson just sitting there waiting for the Avengers to show up. It's like, well, it'd be awesome if you all showed up. And, like, there's so much great stuff that this place puts out. And, I mean, just $5, $10, you know, it supports their efforts.
And it definitely ensures that we'll be able to do that into the future, and we do appreciate that. And I appreciate you saying that, Elliot. And
I mean it.
Of course, whenever you listen to Digital Noise, those Amazon links that we have, or even on the sidebar, just our pick of the week, if you're going to buy anything from Amazon, click there first. Yeah. Even if you don't buy that thing, no matter what you buy, if you got there via our link, we get a cut of that purchase. And that's another way we keep the lights on here. So.
And it requires no work from you.
No, you don't have to give us any money. If you were going to give money to Amazon anyway, just use our link. That's it. That's the easiest thing in the world. Yeah. And we appreciate that. For Elliot, for JC, for Tyler filling in for our neighbor Adam, I just want to remind you that sports are not just for jocks anymore.